Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in. Another edition of Leaving in the Ring, my boxing's official radio show. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with your host, Gabriel Montoya. Man, we got a busy week. We got a real busy week. I mean, if you're a hardcore boxing fan like myself, trust me, you're definitely going to be satisfied with all the fights that are happening. Pay-per-view on Showtime, you got Ricardo Mayorga versus Miguel Cotto. It's been stirring up. It's a lot of fight fans are, honestly, they're really, you know, getting into this fight. When this fight was kind of announced, you know, a lot of us were like, oh, come on, you know, Mayorga. But then you kind of look at Miguel Cotto's career, and he's fought the best. You know, this is a guy that has really put the nail on the head on everything and say, you know what, I want to make a difference when it comes into stepping in the ring. I understand the history behind boxing, and I want to be part of history. So what does he go do? He challenged the best. He hasn't been successful, but that's boxing. That's when guys that really honestly want to put their skills on the line and their name on the line of a roster of trying to make it in the history books, that's what happens. You don't win all the fights, but you definitely win all the respect, and that's something that Miguel Cotto definitely brings when it comes to hardcore boxing fans. Got a lot of respect for Miguel Cotto, but yet he's fighting with Ricardo Mayorga, who's another guy that has gone in with some big names. Not to say that he's been in with some of the best guys in the world, because he has got in with some guys that really he shouldn't have been stepping in with, and he didn't look too great with regardless. But Ricardo Mayorga does hold a punch. He is a big, big 154 guy, and it seems like he's taking this fight real, real serious. So he's always dangerous at every time. But you got to kind of just lean a little bit more. You got to fall with the guy that's more traditional, sound and boxing skills, and the guy that's going to really just use his skills that he's been doing against Ricardo Mayorga. But let's not count out the Matador. The Matador can surprise us. But like some fight fans would say, I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it there, Gabe. What's going on, brother?
Oh, man, just a busy day. I've just been on the phones like nonstop today. A lot of stories breaking, a lot of stuff going on in the world of boxing, and I'm trying to catch it all. And I need an assistant. I think that's what it comes down to, Gabe. I'm going to be like Charlie Sheen, and I'm going to start, tweeting out, you know, I need an intern on intern.com, because, I can rarely pay myself, much less an intern, but, it's been a good day, though, man. I mean, there's been some things that, if people caught, this is going to upset one of our readers, or one of our listeners, Steve Kim put out on his Twitter that he found out that poor Sergey Zenzirik, you know, former WBO champion. His promoters have given him, free food, free vouchers for the employees' cafeteria at Foxwoods Casino.
Wow.
Now, being a former employee of a hotel, and I was actually at a nice hotel, I can tell you that the food in the employees' cafeteria is not very good at all, dude. You know, you get some old chicken, maybe you get some old fish, whatever they don't sell.
You get the leftovers.
Exactly right. This is the sell-by date food. And, granted, he's making an exorbitant amount of money on HBO, somewhere in the $800,000 network or in the neighborhood. So maybe he can, sneak upstairs and go to a nice restaurant. But is that really the way you treat a champion who's fighting for the middleweight title of the world? Sitting somewhere like four-star having lobster and steak and carrying on and probably staying at a nicer hotel than the one that the fight is at. And there he is,
Right. It makes you wonder how confident they are about their champion, where they're like, feed him whatever. He'll do fine. Trust me. He's going to win. Feed him nails. Give him some dirt. He's all right, And Sergio Martinez is up in his hotel room getting the finest food served to him, being treated like a champion, like Steve Kinn had mentioned earlier on his Twitter. I'm just really, nothing surprised me anymore in boxing. There's so much stuff in boxing, man. Would you just shake your head numerous times to the point where you start, you know, those shakings of head, so many turns of the head, you start getting dizzy from it. You start getting dizzy spells and stuff, and you start getting trackings, you know, from your eyes because of so many times you've shaked your head and so many other things in boxing that you're just like, what the hell? But hey, we're the only sport, we have to really kind of self-promote itself, and the only sport that doesn't have a, you know, organization that's really overseeing everything that's being done. Hopefully that there comes a turn of the tide and there's some changes in boxing, but that's a stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I say it every week, you know, every time I think I've seen everything in boxing, I see something else, you know, and you know, is it the greatest travesty of all time? No, but
no,
it just sucks. You know, it's like, dude, that's hard. You know, this guy comes to America. He wants to be a champion. He wants to be treated like a champion.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, here's your free passes for food. Use the service elevator to go downstairs. Don't mind, you know, eating with the dishwasher. He's a champion dishwasher, so you're in good company. You know, it's hard, you know. I mean, I'm just like, wow.
And give him the key to the janitor room to sleep in, you know.
Yeah.
It's closest to the ring here, you know, Sergey. Don't worry about it. You're not gonna wear out your legs. We gave Sergio Martinez the president suite. See, he's got to take an elevator, come all the way down, walk all the way down the hall, walk all the way into the arena and stuff. Trust me, you're much, much better being in the janitor suite.
Do you think he's gonna hear this? Like, housekeeping, and he opens the door.
No, no.
And they hand him a squeegee and, like, you know, a toilet brush, and they go, you know,
wow.
here's some soap, get to work, you know.
You know,
Could you do a couple rooms too while you're at it?
I think what he's gonna hear is gonna be, hey, can you move a little bit? I gotta get that bucket and mop. There's a cleanup over there in room 213.
Poor guy.
In any case, you know, I mean, just think about it. Does it make a huge effect on Sergey against this fight here, getting the hotel food? I don't know. But, you know, a lot of times if I'm a trainer and I got a fighter, I'm going to, you know, be really concerned because whatever your fighter consumes before fight night, it could affect his stomach. You know, he can get some stomach aches. He can get some cramps. Because I know some people are going to be like, well, what's the big deal? Okay, so he's eating some hotel food. So what? You got to look at everything as a factor is that a fighter's body is a machine. You got to oil it correctly. You got to put the right type of gas, the right tires if it's going to race. There's so many things that come in play of making sure your fighter is right in tune and his motor's running correctly in order to perform. So those are the little things. That's why, you know, we're not making a huge big deal about it, but it's a little funny that he would be treated in such a way coming here to the United States for such a big fight facing the middleweight champion of the world, Sergio Martinez. So it just kind of shows you how things are in a box. I mean, look at the kid Lopez, that's Alfonso Lopez, who's going to be stepping in with Kelly Pavlik. He was at a fight where they didn't even have a dressing room for him. You know what I mean? That just tells you the where boxing could be at and stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's
sad.
You know, it's a harsh world, man. That's what's always kind of funny to me is, you know, not to make it about us, but when guys go, you know, oh, you're a shill for Al Haymon or you're a shill for this guy or the promoter. And I'm like, dude, you know, if Sergey Zinzirik gets treated this way, how do you think I get treated? Like, you know, come on. You know, I'm not making, you know, an exorbitant amount of money. I'm barely making any money at this job at all. I do it because I love it and because I want to do it, not because I'm trying to be famous or, you know, try to do anything that raises me up as a person above the sport. I love boxing. And,
exactly.
And so, like the video game show that we're doing, you know, I've been accused of this is the death of journalism and how will I ever be able to read your stuff and think that you're not just chilling with these fighters. And trust me, I'm not chilling with the fighters. You know, it's a show to just promote the sport.
Exactly.
More than some of these promoters, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, definitely stuff. Let me, you know, dispatching somebody that knows more or less that end when it comes to doing promotions, when you're having promoters that are just really kind of jerking you from left and right. Let's get in our first guest, you know, welterweight champ, ex-champ, Luis Collazo. What's up, brother?
What's going on?
How you doing, man?
I'm good. Getting ready for my big bout coming back April 13th.
I heard about that, man. April 13th, you're getting back in the ring. The former WBA welterweight champion, the People's Champ. You know, 34-15 KOs, man. April 13th at Ocean Hall in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Luis, I think the first question is from everybody's been wondering is, where you been, brother? Where you been?
Well, I've been getting mentally and physically right. You know, I was in contract with Don King. Finally, it's over. Leaving the past in the past and going to deal with the present. Getting ready for April 13th, and I'm grateful to be back. I'm excited.
Now, I remember that. You were having a tug-of-war with Don King's promotions, and, you know, they just didn't seem to be doing justice for you. You know, you had some really close fights where a lot of fight fans felt that you kind of, you know, swayed them. You should have gotten the win, but you didn't. And you kind of felt like, hey, I'm left in the dark. They're putting me in the shelf, you know, when they should be using me, utilizing me to get back into the ring, but they didn't do that. Now that you feel free and you're now with a new management group and you're with Universal Promotions, how do you feel? I mean, when you talk about mentally, Luis, mentally now, do you feel, I'm not really sure if it's going to get everything back on track, but I'm just going to give it a shot one more time to see if I can get back on track.
Well, definitely. You know, I'm at ease right now. I'm mentally right. I don't got no burden on my back. And I got a great team behind me now, and we just got to move forward and make the most of it this upcoming year.
Absolutely, man. So talk to us a little bit about your opponent, brother.
To be honest, I don't know my opponent who it is yet, but like I said, I'm just getting ready. I'm in camp now in South Carolina, and I'm just getting ready for April 13th. It's going to be a big night in Brooklyn. I'm back, and can't wait for all my fans to be there.
In terms of not even knowing who your opponent is, you know, are you anxious, though, to find out? I mean, you obviously you've been in with some of the best fighters out there, man, and you've put your skills to the test. That's why you have so many fight fans out there that are just, you know, really honestly that follow you, man, and got so much love for you because you definitely represent what a fighter's heart's supposed to be like and stuff, man. But when you look at opponents, do you tell your team, do you talk to Moses Ramon and Norik? Do you say, listen, I just don't want an easy name. I want something that maybe tests out and maybe shakes some of the rust that I might have on the ring.
Well, definitely. My team knows what opponent to get and what's going to be a great fight. Not only a comeback fight, but a great fight to give to the fans and to get me back on track. And I'm just getting ready for whatever it is and whoever it is.
I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel, you got any questions for Luis?
Of course. How you doing, Luis? Welcome to the show, man.
Hey. Thank you. I appreciate you for having me.
Our pleasure. I know you want to leave the past in the past. I just want to ask a little bit about the situation with King and why is it that you sat on the shelf? I mean, was it just kind of one of those situations where you didn't take the fights he wanted you to take when he wanted you to take them, and so you kind of got froze out in your contract and you had to sit out the whole length of it?
Well, after the Berto fight, it was hard to get fights, and Don just had to do what he had to do for his other fighters. Then I had some time off, probably like a year, and then he tried to give me a fight at 147 pounds. And I was out for a year, so I didn't want to take the fight at 147 anymore. So I felt like I couldn't make the weight anymore. So I told him to get me a fight at 154. And then he was trying to get me another fight for a world title. And I was like, I'm inactive for a year. Now you're going to throw me in there with a world champion. You know, my timing probably was off. A different weight class. So I wanted to get my feet wet at 154 pounds, but he never made that happen. So, and he never pushed the issue to give me another fight.
Do you think it's in some sense it's? And I don't, you know, I don't want you to, you don't have to trash the guy that you used to work with, but Don's getting older now, and you kind of see him do co-promotions, or he was doing a lot of stuff in Europe. He's not quite the power that he used to be. He's still a personality. But he used to run boxing, and now it seems like, you know, he's working with Bob Arum, he's working with guys in Europe. He's not quite the same guy, and do you think, in a sense, there's a big part of it was that he just doesn't have the pull at the networks to move his fighters the way he used to?
Well, probably so. You know, Don gave me a great opportunity. If it wasn't for Don, I wouldn't be in the situation I'm at today, because he's the only one that signed me when I was a free agent back then, back in 2002. And... because of him, I fought Jose Rigaldo Rivera, Ricky Hatton, the Sugar Shane Mosley fight. If it wasn't for him, I would never have those opportunities. And I'm just grateful for the opportunities he gave me, and I'm moving on forward. I'm a free agent now, and I can't wait to get back in the mix.
What gym are you training out of now, Luis?
Universal Boxing in Queens, New York.
And what are some of the names that you're working with to help you out to get you back into full form when you get back into the ring in April?
Well, I was working with Sakul Powell, featherweight coming up now too, Rafael Vasquez, Dimitri Salida. He's now on the undercard of where I'm at, fighting at April 13th. We got Cuba, Mike Reyes. So there's been a lot of kids coming up and up in to the gym in Queens to give me some good work. So I've just been grateful and have the opportunity to go out there and perform again.
So since you've been away from the ring, Luis, have you, like, maybe, what have you been doing? Have you been, like, hanging out and then gained some weight and now you're getting back in a fighting shape? Or did you continue to keep training regardless, you know, because you knew that you were going to make a comeback and you just needed to fix your promotional status?
I'm a gym rat. I'm what they call a gym rat. I'm always in the gym. Even when I wasn't training, I'd be in the gym helping the kids. Coming down South Carolina, White Rock Boxing Gym. That's where I'm at right now, actually, getting ready for my fight. And I'm always in the gym. I'm always trying to get, you know, prepared for whatever it is they're going to throw at me. But my time off was great, and now it's time to go to work.
I had a chance to speak a little bit to your new management team, Moses Ramon, and you know, he was really honestly excited, and he said, you know, it's a privilege for us because they have to put in the work to really push you out there, to get you out there back into the scene, and to show that you're still, you know, championship caliber. Do you feel that you have 100% this time team that's with you? You know what I mean? Well, you guys are in sync.
Absolutely. I feel blessed to have a team that I have now and the experience that I have as well. And it'd be good to take it to another level. The boxing world haven't seen the best of Luis Collazo yet. So coming up, hopefully these fans and the so-called critics, they got to get ready because I'm coming.
Now, when we talk about critics and fights, what are some of the fights that you're looking for? I know for a long time, man, a lot of people were saying, like to see a rematch with Andre Berto, but that's kind of like gone and passed because you've been away from the ring for so long. But is that still lingering in your mind?
You know what? Since my fight, to be honest, Andre Berto haven't stepped up to the plate and fought someone big like he fought when he fought me. So I'm not even looking at Berto anymore. I'm just looking for the biggest fight to 154 or 147 pounds, hopefully I can make in the near future. But whatever the fans want, that's what I'm going to give them. And I'm just grateful to have the fans that I have, and I'm going to keep giving them the great fights.
What weight are you going to be coming in on April 13th? What is the schedule for?
I believe it's 154 pounds.
Okay, brother. Hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on. You know, I know what it's going to be on pay-per-view. Everybody can watch it. Catch it at www.behindthering.com. You can purchase for $9.99. Tune in and watch Luis Collazo get back in the ring, get himself back in form, and hopefully get a chance to get back a title belt that he once had.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
And you can follow Luis on his official Twitter, because I know there were some people out there, man, that were trying to take your Twitter name here, brother. The real Luis Collazo. So be sure to follow Luis Collazo out there, too, on the Twitter world.
Thank you for having me once again. And for all my fans, thank you for the support through the years. And get ready. April 13th, Team Collazo is back.
All right, brother. Now, keep us updated, man, and get you back on before you fight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right, Luis. You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. Luis Collazo. I know a lot of fight fans had asked us in the past if we can get him on, and we got him back on because now he's getting back into the ring. I'm still a fan of him, you know, Gabe. I know that he's been away from the ring for some time, and, you know, some people are like, well, he's, you know, he's off the chart. You know, why bring him back on the chart? I'm still curious. He's still a young guy, 154. I want to see if he's still got it, if he's still elusive. You know, he's never been known to be a big puncher, but he's been known to make a fighter, a good fighters look pretty amateurish sometimes when they get in the ring.
I thought he beat Andre Berto. You know,
I thought so
just
too.
Straight up. To answer the question somebody's asking in our chat room, no, he's not getting a rematch with Andre Berto unless Berto moves up to 154. That's just not going to happen. You know. There were some contractual issues. They were kind of arguing back and forth, and Luis really only went down to 147 for that fight. Had a lot of trouble making the weight, and you know, they tried to make it again, and it just wasn't worth his while to kind of sacrifice himself, especially since he won the first fight and didn't get the decision. So, you know, why go back to there and make those same sacrifices? You know, the guy's a tough out every time. And 154 is a division that is very interesting. It's very young in a lot of ways. And it's also got some guys that are MIA, you know, Angulo, who knows where he is. Certainly, Gary Shaw doesn't know where he is right now. And any of his trainers, you ask, like, where is he? I don't know. You know, and then we don't know where Paul Williams is going to land in terms of weight, you know, when he comes back. That's an interesting fight for Paul, you know, with Colazzo. Then you've got James Kirkland, who his handlers are telling me are going to be back. Last I heard, they were going to bring him back March 18th, but they were still looking for an opponent. And people were turning that fight down left and right. They actually had some good opponents lined up, some step-up guys that would go some rounds with him.
Right.
And they didn't want to jeopardize because he's on the April 9th pay-per-view with you know, the action heroes for Maidana and Morales. And they didn't really want to jeopardize him because he's an integral part of a card that just lost Winky Wright. And they really need Kirkland on there. So I should actually find out sometime during the show or after the show whether or not that fight's still going to go on March 18th. But you look at the rest of the division, you've got Canelo there. You've got Vanes Martirosyan there. There's some young guys. Nobody's really taken charge of the division and said, I'm the guy to beat. Canelo's the guy that'll bring you money, but he's the guy that can be beat. So it's going to be interesting seeing Colazzo try to get back in the mix and see if any of these guys are going to look at him and say, what's the risk, what's the reward, and do I want to fight this guy? I tend to think no. You know, they're gonna try to avoid him as before. I don't know if you've ever seen Colazzo at 154. I remember seeing him, I believe it was on the Mosley Mayorga undercard at 154 pounds before the Berto fight. And
yeah,
strong. He's very strong at that weight. You know, and I looked at him going, like, how's he gonna move back down? And he's a strong dude at that weight, and he's technically sound. He can move well. He can brawl when he needs to. He's got a good chin. He's a problem. So it'll be interesting seeing him go forward.
He is definitely a problem, you know, and that's why I said you have to have tremendous respect for Luis Colazzo, and especially, you know, having problems with his promotional group, management group at the time. Now he's moved on and poured himself with some other. He aligned himself with some other people, like, you know, like I said, with Universal Boxing. He's getting back in the ring. He's. You're going to see him back on April 13th. It's on a pay-per-view card. Like I said, $9.99 is definitely a good $9.99 is definitely a good price to see him get back in the ring. It's behindthering.com. See, why not? You know, and you'll watch it live on pay-per-view. You got to go to that website, behindthering.com, or you can go to Portiqua Boxing and check that out. And if you want to follow him, so maybe you have, I have a chance to chop it up with him, with Luis Colazzo, because this is his real Twitter account, the real Luis Colazzo. Hey, do so, man. Support the guy. You know, this is somebody, really, a lot of fight fans, boxing, hardcore boxing fans, did adore and did follow and said, hey, yo, this is the people's champ, because he was taking some big risk. He was always the underdog going in, but he keep proving time and time and time again, don't count me out. Also, too, just to, you know, and I forgot to mention this, you know, next month on April 22nd, it's Luis Colazzo's birthday. So hopefully we can get him on before his birthday or on his birthday here on Leaving the Ring so we can celebrate it with him really, really quick, man. And I appreciate it, too, for him choosing us to be the first guys to interview him on his comeback into the ring on April 13th. But speaking about being a problem, Gabriel, wow.
Wow.
Ponce de Leon. Let's talk a little bit about Ponce de Leon this Saturday night. You know, I'll let you go first, because I definitely got a lot to talk about when it comes to the subject of two guys that stepped in at lightweight and some people being a little tough on the problem with Sarah calling them the situation. You know, go for it, Gabe.
Yeah, you know, we've got Manny Stewart coming on here in about 5 minutes. I'll be brief. I didn't think Broner won the fight. You know, it was a 6-4 kind of fight. That's how I scored it. You know, I could see 6-4 the other way for Broner based on clean punching. You know, certainly not effective aggression because there wasn't any aggression. But he was moving and keeping Bunce chasing him a lot of the time. Some would call that ring generalship. I didn't see the punch stats because I just think those are silly. But he definitely, you know, landed some clean shots throughout the fight and it was the guy that'd be solved. But I just thought based on pure effort, it was Ponce, you know, that he was moving forward. He was trying to make a fight out of it and basically just trying to get it done, you know. And to me, he just seemed like the guy that wanted it more. And I thought that should have been rewarded on some level, you know, that Broner was a guy that I was high on coming into the fight. You know, I've covered him a couple times. I'd watched a bunch of tape of him, but it's interesting. There's a writer I like reading. They call him the Bread Man, you know, Stephen Edwards. And he writes for Boxing Talk. And he's, to me, the only good thing on that site. And he was talking in one of his mailbags about how he does like an eye test, basically, looking at opponents, looking at fighters and what he thinks they could be down the line. And one of his ways is looking at the way he beats the guys that he beats. And he's basically saying, like, if the guy is always all aggression and blowing out his opponent and bowling them over, that might be a problem down the line. It may not develop quite the way you want to. But if a guy is blowing some guys out but picking apart other guys and not taking much damage but being very scientific and smart in his approach, then odds are that when he steps up, he's going to be a little more intelligent and still kind of aggressive and maintain that, what you think he's going to be, as he moves up the ladder. And when you look at Broner, he was kind of blowing guys out as opposed to kind of picking them apart scientifically. He was kind of bigger or just, you know, more of a higher class. So I wonder if this was just too big of a step for him, you know, and I think that might be it.
You know,
when he was nervous, right,
you know, first off, I thought some fight fans were being a little tough on Broner, you know, saying, you know what, you know, he's boring, you know, I don't want to see him back on HBO. First, kudos to Ponce de Leon, you know, because last week we talked about this fight and we gave off our predictions, you know, and I said that, you know, Ponce de Leon is just a very awkward guy, you know, you really can't predict how he's going to throw his punches because he throws them so off, you know, and he kind of looks off balance. But I tell you what, he has really impressed me in terms of ring intelligence, you know, stepping on the toe to stop Broner from pulling back so that he can try to land a big shot. To me, it was a smart move, but at the same time, a dangerous move because Broner could have countered off of that, you know, enough where maybe get a flash knockdown because you're stepping on the foot, you know, and if your front foot, which your weight kind of leans in when you throw off to try to get your big shots in, is not planted correctly, so you're a little off balance and you can get dropped and get a flash knockdown. Broner, to me, just didn't seem to be completely comfortable. I got the sense that he wasn't sure how to counter him. He wasn't sure what kind of rhythm he should bring. And I really think that he was just completely thrown off in that fight. Now, how it swayed over to Broner getting the decision, I'm still a little puzzled because we're talking about two Golden Boy fighters here. But one obviously is getting, you know, I guess they're trying to, I don't know what it is. HBO maybe is looking at this kid and saying, hey, you know what? Let's invest more money here. We're not going to get a whole lot with this kid, this Mexican kid, because he's not the most technically sound, and he's been knocked out before when you got a technically sound fighter but like Juanma Lopez. Broner, I think he had the right game plan, but he just didn't execute it enough. You know, when he decided to back up here, Gabriel, and we saw this. When he backed up, it was Ponce de Leon's fight. When he moved forward, it was the problem's fight. You know, that's when it became a problem. But he just didn't seem to know what game plan to execute, because let's not not forget, he said, I didn't watch any tapes on him because I was bored. He didn't impress me. That told me a whole lot right there. Was like, man, you didn't even do your homework, dude. This guy is dangerous, you know? And I think he finally realized, I think on that second round, he had that face expression like, shit, you know what? Maybe I should have been put in the janitor's room and got, you know, the hotel food with some videotapes of Ponce de Leon, you know? Because he definitely needed some type of tips there. And his trainers definitely did not have anything to execute him, get out of the situation that he was in against Ponce de Leon. Ponce de Leon should have got away with that fight.
Yeah, I mean...
I think Gabriel fell off here. Gabe, you there? Or he might have pushed mute. But, you know, again, you know, you just sit back, you know, and overall the fight was a good fight. It wasn't as bad as what some folks were kind of throwing out there on Twitter, on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. It was a good fight. I did enjoy it because it was more of a chess match type of fight. You know, they're both were trying to figure it out. But you had the guy that was daring to take the moment, which was Ponce de Leon, okay? He was daring to take the moment. He was looking for his big shots. He was looking to cut the ring. He was definitely looking to score the punches that obviously would sway the judges. What the judges were looking for in that fight, I have no clue. I'm very puzzled, like the rest of the fight fans that tune in Saturday night on HBO. I sat there and go, wow, did I miss something here? Do I need to go back and watch this? And sure enough, I watched it two more times. And that just shows you how much of a fight head I am, man, boxing head I am, that I went back and watched the fight that most fight fans were saying that put them to sleep, that they had to literally scratch their eyes after that fight. That's how horrible it was.
Yeah, it was not a good look. You know, it was just I mean, it's the thing. He didn't really have – and thank you for AT&T for cutting me off mid-sentence. it was one of those things where you look at it and say, okay, he's a pure athlete, probably more athlete than boxer, although he's, you know, he's a skilled amateur guy. He's been fighting for years. But when it comes down to it, like when you've got a guy like Ponce who's kind of awkward and crowding you and kind of going at you – Things are tough, you know. You have to get fundamental with a guy like Ponce, you know. Double jab, step out, you know, catch him coming in. What was happening early on was that both guys were trying to make the other guy lead. They're both natural counterpunchers looking to get their power off by making you make a mistake, and neither guy wanted to commit. And yeah, I can understand that. First two rounds, everybody was really restless, but I'm like, what they're looking at is two guys who have very strong wills and don't want to give in. You know, but at some point, you're the bigger guy, you're the stronger guy. Maybe he tasted his power, I don't know, but you have to start making something happen and maybe lure him into traps. To me, it was just experience versus inexperience, straight-up game plan versus a guy that has been used to kind of figuring it out as he goes along. It was just a big step up in terms of experience, and that showed, you know, and that's, I think, what really people were complaining about is here's a guy on a co-feature on HBO, and he's not ready for prime time yet.
He wasn't ready to steal the moment. That's the thing where most fight fans were upset. He wasn't ready to steal the moment. I mean, look, in the tradition of boxing after dark, these fights that have been happening for the last couple of years don't hold up when Barrera stepped in the ring for the very first time to debut that program, you know? And I think that's what fight fans are really kind of looking at, and when you have other people that are going like, man, you know, you guys are picking this a little bit too harsh or being a little – you guys are expecting a little too much. Well, when you give us a good product in the beginning and then you start watering it down, it you know, it's kind of a slap in the face. And I understand completely where paying boxing fans are complaining about. You know, if you're dishing out money, you know, out of your pocket for a monthly bill that you work very hard for, and you want to have entertainment in your living room, or if you buy tickets and you're taking the fam out to relax here there in Las Vegas or wherever you're going, or Anaheim in that case, you're looking to get your money's worth, and that's what fight fans are looking at. They're like, wow, these guys were the co-feature, and this is what I got for busting my ass at a blue-collar job? Some of us have to sit in front of a desk and a computer all day and listen to the boss go, yeah, I'm going to have you stay here for 2 more hours. You're working on a construction site, and you know somebody put a nail through a pipe, and you got to stay 4 more hours, you know, to fix that. That all comes, you know, into play where you want to go home, relax, pop open a beer, and watch good fights. And some of these fighters that are getting these prime times, you need to listen up. You need to listen to the consumers because we're the one that pay the bills. Give us some good fights. You could have tried a little bit more, Broner. You could have tried a little bit more for us.
Yeah. You know, I would agree. You know, it's just one of those things where you know, to me, it's just you've got to risk a little bit. You've got to kind of go forward and say, you know, the fight's not happening the way it should, and I need to actually do something here to make a lasting impression, to win some fans. You know, it isn't all about just winning. Sometimes it's about how you win, how you try. And that was kind of what I was disappointed in. He started to showboat a little bit, and he just kind of did everything that was very immature, in my opinion, as a fighter. Like, oh, I'm winning, screw the crowd. And it's like, well, no, you're not. You know, it's a really close fight, and you really need to make a statement in here. And when you got, like, a Juanma Lopez who blew out Ponce de Leon in one round.
Wow, yep.
You're having problems with him. You know, granted, you know, it doesn't always work that way just because one guy beat the guy, you know, and Ponce has worked on his game and changed it much. But still, that should be, you know, a lot of fighters like John Molina will always say to me, he's actually texting me right now about his upcoming fight. You know, he'll say, like, you know, Guerrero, that's a guy I want to fight. He fought this guy that I'm fighting. He did this with him. Well, I want to do better than him. I want to make a statement. And I didn't get that from them. They seemed to kind of feel like they had it in the bag, and we got the better athlete, and we're going to win, and we've got Al and everybody in Golden Boy behind us. We should win. That's just, you know, you got to do more than that. Yeah, that's how I look at it. I'll be right back. I'm going to call Manny Stewart in. He's waiting for us.
Absolutely.
Just 1 second, sir.
And, you know, in terms of this, on the same night, you had Saul Alvarez, El Canelo, get in the ring with Ricky Hatton's little brother, Matthew Hatton. You know what? At 154, there's no way the kid can go back down 147. You know, where I think he might be a little bit more devastating when it comes to punches. At 154, his legs, I mean, if you look at his legs, Jesus, man, they're like tree trunks. But with those big legs, you think he would carry a little bit more power, a little bit more oomph to him when he lands punches and stuff. But I you know, I was still very, very entertained. Yeah.
And I'm back. I'm here with Hall of Fame trainer, trainer Miguel Cotto, Andy Lee, Vladimir Klitschko, Chad Dawson even. Everybody. I feel he's going to start training me next. Manuel Stewart, welcome to the show, Manny.
It's my pleasure being on the show, Gabriel.
Hey, Manny. How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. It's, you know, busy the last couple of days before all the fights. A lot of press and a lot of, you know, activities and things going on over here at the MGM Grand.
Emmanuel,
what's
the
atmosphere like out there?
Well, it's right now, it's not that really fight mode you get from big fights yet. Today is Thursday. And probably big tomorrow. You know, everyone is starting to come in. A lot of the press guys that wasn't here for the press conference, the final press conference yesterday, didn't arrive until today. So that's why I'm doing a lot of one-on-ones now. But it's starting to pick up a little bit. But it's not a big super crowd yet.
Emmanuel,
I think the biggest thing in this is going to be the pay-per-view probably more so than the live fight. Yeah.
Right. Emmanuel, in terms of big fights, I mean, you've been in some pretty big fights yourself, but is this one of the funnest ones you've been involved in? I mean, Ricardo Mayorga is really entertaining when it comes to his trash talking. Do you guys buy into it? Do you take offense to it, or do you shrug it off?
Well, I shrug it off because he does that with all the people, just like he got this way with one person and he wasn't with anyone else. You say, really, he's really into, you know, this, really emotionally involved in this fight. But that's just him, period. And, you know, and I think a lot of it is just part of his nature. But to get to your, probably the core of your question, it doesn't bother Miguel at all. Miguel is, I would have to say this one title I would give him of all of the fighters I work with. He's got the coolest, most unemotional fighter that I have ever been involved with in my life.
He actually laughs
after the press conference. He says, he's just doing stuff to sell tickets, you know, and he just laughs at it. Because if you go through, like, we've been through about six of these. I've never been in a fight where I've been through so many press conferences. We've had L.A. and Puerto Rico, New York, I don't know, I think it was Chicago, and about three of them here, just, you know, we've been together just this last week. And
wow.
We had a media day, and we had to go through this every day with him pulling his shirt up and showing his muscles, and every day he's got a different line of something with Miguel that we have been talking about his mother to one time, talking about his friend. I mean, it's just everything. But, you know, after a while, you get immune to it.
Right,
and,
right.
And we just figured it just business.
You know,
but the one thing about it, when the bell rings, you know, Miguel says the same thing he said when I worked with him with Foreman, even though it's a different situation. You know, he has to fight you, and they put a mouthpiece in his mouth, and then in Mayorga's case, and he won't be able to talk him after fight. And so, he is the least emotional guy I've ever saw. And, you know, I thought when I would see him before go out and sit in the crowd with his family and watch fighters fight before he would fight, that was just, you know, because, you know, he was that confident. But after he's lost the fight to Pacquiao and Margarita, I thought maybe he would change. But he's just that way. He just, nothing seems to bother him. And he never complains about anything. And that's probably the mystique that he has that probably has made him so attractive to people.
I
was surprised when I began working with him how popular he is with people and the fans and people in general. Maybe because there's like a mystique about him. Never complains about anything. And even the fights he lost, Pacquiao and Margarita, there was honorable-type losses.
Right. Does that worry you a little bit at all when you say that he's kind of emotionless? I mean, does it make you wonder whether or not if he's getting the new strategies that you're giving him?
Oh, yeah, he's got it. You know, what was so interesting is when I started to teach him to use his feet better, keep his weight even in balance, he laughed at me and said, Stuart, I used to be like that. And we were a few weeks ago watching, they had on one of their websites, they had a thing where I got blobbed, or whatever you call it, one of them things called Latimer Klitschko at 17. Wow. And I pulled it up. I could not believe it. It looked like Sugar Ray Leonard. He had his Puerto Rican outfit on and a big international match, pumping confirmations, dancing in and out, waving his hand, playing to the crowd, you know, just showboating. So getting him to go back to boxing was not that difficult as I thought it would. And it's something that he said he just got so carried away with just being so physical. When he turned professional, he was just crushing all these guys with that body punch in particular, that he neglected his boxing skills. And then when he got to that top level with the Mosleys and the Pacquiao, Claudius, all of those fights, even though they won, he still, you know, had a rough time and took a lot of punishment. So it was very easy to get him to go back to boxing again and using his jab. And you'll see a much more improved fighter than he was from the first fight I was in, which was Yuri Foreman.
You know,
with the guys that have beat him, they're taller, they've got more power. You know, like Trinidad had a nice one-punch power, so did De La Hoya, and they were bigger, and they kind of boxed in order to set up that power. Do you think that's going to be absolutely the key for Miguel, is to be disciplined and not play into a toe-to-toe war, but to stay on the outside, work that jab, and then slowly set a foundation of damage that will set up a knockout?
I normally would say that would be the strategy, because, you know, I always base all of my strategy off of a jab. I mean, regardless of whether I'm training the short guy tall, it's the jab. Even the last fight with Yuri Foreman, the jab was what I had with Miguel on. It didn't work usually, even though it was about a 4 or 5 inch height. But this case, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't mind him standing toe-to-toe with Mayorga, because Mayorga's punches are wide, looping punches. And Miguel's is much more short and much more accurate. And he has great punching power. And I want him to box, but if he gets an opportunity, I may have to engage. You know, he doesn't have to run and stay away. Sometimes I do work that. But I just feel that if Mayorga was a type of a short power puncher, like a Mike Tyson or Joe Frazier or something, it would be different. But his punches are so wide that I believe he can get caught with a short punch while he's delivering his punches. Even though most of those guys waited him out, and he intimidated and bullied them, I don't think that he can do that with Miguel the way Miguel is punching right now. I think it would be worth the risk to gamble. I think we were knocking out early. So I'm going to have him come out, operate off a solid jab, but not to be bullied and pushed around and have all of this fear of this big, hard-punching guy, because I don't feel that Mayorga is as dangerous as a guy that throws punches that you can't see.
When I've seen Cotto hurt, I guess it was the Corley fight and other fights, it's usually the punch he doesn't see, but also getting caught on top of the head and at odd angles seemed to kind of throw him, like I guess it would anybody. So do you think that's the big fear, is that the way he loops, that sure you can see them coming, but some of them are going to land on top of the head, behind the head, especially the way Miguel tends to bend forward. Is that a concern for you, or is that a technical issue that you've fixed in getting him to stand more upright?
Well, anytime you're fighting a guy that swings for a knockout, as you say, those punches for a knockout are like trying to hit a home run every time he's up to bat. You don't really have to worry about that. But I think that's part of the risk in boxing. I think the fact that Miguel is boxing with his weight more evenly distributed and not excessively bending over with all of his weight over his left front foot the way he was fighting, arms out very wide, made it very volatile for him to get hit. When he was leaning in the punches, I believe keeping his weight better distributed, he'll be able to see punches a lot better, in particular now that he's operating off of his left jab. So, it's always a risk of getting hit on the head, chin, or anywhere and getting hurt. But I think he'll be okay in this fight, mainly if he works with his left jab. And it has to be an authoritative jab, not a weak jab.
Yeah, but you've got another fighter fighting this weekend. I know you're not going to just jump on a plane and go over there. Andy Lee is fighting Craig McEwen. Can you break that fight down for us a little bit? And who's going to be in his corner?
My nephew, Javen Hill, who works with me and is at my protege, I guess. In fact, Andy's best fight that he's had in his career when he knocked out Carl Daniels with a great left hook, a right hook, 2 years back. I wasn't there that night. I got caught up in a situation with HBO. And my same situation is coming up again. So my nephew will be able to work with him. And I feel very comfortable. We've been talking about it. We all trained together all along. So just this past week, we had to separate. And I've been speaking to both today, and I may have to even watch it on my laptop where I've ended up and make some comments to them between rounds.
Oh, wow.
But I feel that we'll be okay for the fight. McEwen is a gangly type, busy guy who's fairly big himself, and he throws punches from different angles, very loose, very relaxed, punches freely, left-handed and right-handed. I think Andy's a little bit more of a professional fighter, so to say, at this stage, places his punches better, and I think his power and his right jab, even though both are southpaws, would dictate, and he was to knock out McEwen in the second half of the fight.
Now there's talks of David Haye finally signing with Latimer Klitschko. How do you feel about that fight there, Emmanuel?
I think you would see the best of Latimer, even if he would lose, because he's emotionally stimulated for this fight, unlike any fight that I've ever known him in, because David has gotten under his skin, and it should be exciting, because both guys have fast hands, both are pretty good punchers, both have questionable chins. So it should be very exciting early. I think Latimer's overall size plus having skills, his speed to fairly match Haye would give him a big advantage. But you can never tell, especially if one guy can match early in the fight. But it's just a fight that the public has wanted because of David building it up. And it's good for boxing. I wish we could get Mayweather and Pacquiao, which would really, really be a big, big shot in the arm for boxing. But next to that, this is probably the most public demanded fight, so I'm glad to see it happen.
No. You think it's actually going to happen?
I think it's going to happen, based on a lot of situations. It's both guys don't have any other fight that the public is interested in, and they both have became fully aware of that. So I think the fight will happen. And Latimer called me up a couple of days ago, very, very excited about the fight. So I think it'll happen the latter part of June or maybe the first week of July.
Wow, that'd be great. That would be great. I'd love to see that fight. Manuel, in terms of, as Vladimir is your heavyweight, you know, with Lennox Lewis, he was never seemed to be in breakers until after he was retired by America. But with David Haye and Vladimir Klitschko here, do you think this would be the turning of maybe the Americans and seeing Vladimir Klitschko under David Haye?
I couldn't hear you exactly on some of the situations where there's a lot of noise, but...
He was saying, is this going to be the fight that turns things for Vladimir? The way Lennox, the public really didn't get behind him that much, and then he had a big fight and everybody got excited about him. Is this that fight for Vladimir?
Well, I think it will be the fight that we're doing, because beyond this, there's nothing else. That's what, so it has to be the fight. There's no other signature fight out there. Lennox was very much disappointed in his career, the same as Vladimir, until I think it ended up with the Holyfield fight, and then it was a fairly good fight, and the controversy over the first fight being called a draw, you know, drew a little more excitement, and between that and his, I guess, knockout over Hossein Rockman in the rematch, and the fight with Mike Tyson, that's pretty much just what cemented his popularity and his, I would say, his spot in history with the American public. And Vladimir has not had that yet. So, and there's not any more after this, so he has to do it in this fight. But I think this will give him credibility if he can show an impressive knockout with the American public.
Thank you, Manny. I know it's really loud where you're at. You're in the thick of things in Vegas, you know, you're hanging out at the tables or wherever. I just want to thank you for coming on to the show and giving us the time. Good luck this week.
Well, okay, and I hope this fight turns out to be a good, exciting fight, because it's the fight where I think Miguel is rightfully so the big favorite, but, you know, it's some fights that people want to see just for the action. Regardless of what happens, whether it's a 3 or 4 round fight, people say they're going to see some action. They're going to see a crazy guy come out throwing punches, and then you got Miguel, who's never known to be a runner, who's going to stand there and probably punch back with him. So they're going to see that, then to see maybe 12 rounds of a technical fight.
Like we saw last weekend with Broner and Ponce de Leon.
I didn't even see it. But okay, son, let me jump off and tell me I got to do some other stuff here now.
All right,
well,
Manuel, thank you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay then, Gabriel. Okay then. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Take care, man.
That's funny. That is funny, man.
He's one of the great personalities in the sport, and he always says the same thing, is that what we need is more knockouts. You know, not necessarily always the best versus the best, but more knockouts. You know, and
right.
You know, I just pictured him watching that fight, and now we find out he didn't watch that fight, but just shaking his head, going, "What is this kid doing?" You know, he's not exciting anybody. It's just the anti-Manny, you know.
When you mention more knockouts, what we need is more knockouts. That's definitely what we needed with Alvarez and Canelo when he got in with Matthew Hatton. We needed a knockout, you know. I mean, 12 rounds of just a one-sided fight. I felt like that ref could have jumped in at any moment and just stopped that fight. You know, I mean, Matthew Hatton was definitely not going to turn that fight around. I know that one punch can turn a fight around, but he's just not one of those guys that can have a one punch to turn the fight around. I know people are, you know, casual fans, and the way, you know, Golden Boy is trying to sell it, and the HBO Network, you know, the youngest guy to win the 154. No, he's. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Seriously.
I think we all know who was the youngest guy that won the title and won it rightfully the right way. You know, my problem is this: is that, you know. It's funny, we got, you know, we get tons of emails here on leavingthering@gmail.com, and one of them was, one of our listeners goes, "I'm not going to hate on Canelo, you know, I think he's good for the sport, and I think him, by him winning the title, is a good thing for the sport and for the 154 division." I wrote back and I said, you could be right, but the problem is this, is he has the title, he has to do something with it, and he's a title holder. He's a prospect with a title. To me, I have a huge problem with that. Not against Canelo. He's just going to go in there and do his job. And, of course, the kid's going to be excited about winning the title. means now he's got to live up to that title, and he's got to live up being the youngest 154 titleist right now in history. That's how they're putting it. They're putting it in the books of history, but he's got to live up to that. And by him living up to that, you got some pretty good names at 154 that he's got to test himself with.
That's the problem. He's going to have to, you know, either Suleiman's going to keep giving him mandatories that are more mismandatory than a mandatory, you know, than a legit contender, you know, or he's going to have to prove himself. And I think it's unfair to boxing's history and to the fans when you get a guy like say, Andre Berto, who I feel, you know, we're always kind of dropping his name, but it's kind of the poster child for this, of getting a belt and then going, yeah, but I'm still a young fighter and I'm developing, and so I'm going to fight a bunch of guys that aren't quite there. I mean, he fought Colato and he fought Quintana, but then there's a bunch of other opponents that you know, Freddy Hernandez being the number one guy that we point at, that aren't on that level. And you look at what Vargas did. Now, he beat kind of an older guy, not kind of, you know, definitely an older guy, to get his title.
Right.
He took it from Yuri Boy Campos, made him quit in 7 rounds. And then he beats, you know, Howard Clark, who's, you know, just kind of a soft touch fight. But then he fought Raul Marquez, who was not an easy fight. Ricky Wright, some people think he lost, not an easy fight. Ike Corte, not an easy fight. He fought, you know, Ross Thompson, who's, you know, kind of a perennial contender, blows him out in 4 rounds. And then he goes straight to Felix Trinidad. That is a guy that's trying to define himself as a great fighter. Is Canelo going to do the same thing? We'll see. You know, I'm not really sure that's the road they're going to go. He's only 20 years old. And this is the thing, is that Vargas was the youngest Olympian, was the youngest junior middleweight title holder. He was a prodigy coming up, much the way they're marketing Canelo. But the proof was in the pudding. He could hang with those guys. And even getting dropped by Trinidad 2 times in 30 seconds of the first round, he got up, he dropped Tito in the 4th round, and almost finished that fight and was – you know, the fight was pretty close, you know.
Absolutely.
Maybe not so much on the cards, but in terms of a fight and that one punch could change it, he was in that fight for much of it. And
the thing, too, is this.
I wouldn't put dude in with Tito right now. He'd get killed.
No, you know, and the thing is, too, I mean, Canelo looks like 154, but he sure doesn't punch like 154, you know. And that's the huge difference when you put in Fernando Vargas, who was a young kid, but he definitely had the power to carry it, you know, and he definitely had the skills to carry that level, like you just mentioned, him getting in with the great Tito Trinidad. Canelo, to me, it's just a work in progress. I mean, it's a little rush, in my opinion. I say allow the kid to grow, allow him to grow into what, you know, possibly he could be, but by rushing him and giving him a title and giving him a free pass of saying, hey, you know what, you're the youngest champion in the world now, you know, now go out and take on the world. You're kind of leaving. It's like you're dropping off your child out in the middle of the desert where he's never been and go, hey, find your way back home. He just shouldn't do it, you know. And I really don't like that at all.
I think, you know, one of the things, you know, the big question to me with Canelo, and I remember following him before he was with Golden Boy. I had somebody tell me, you got to see this kid out of Mexico. He's like 18 years old. He's been fighting a little while, and he fights a little different than your average Mexican, but the fans really love him. And then I saw him. The guy didn't mention he had red hair. And I saw him. He's got the red hair, the freckles, pale skin. And I kind of, as I watched him, I thought, okay, he's raw. He's different. I kind of like it. Watched him win. Then Golden Boy got him, and they've moved him. And I think they've done a wonderful job promoting him. But my question is he a good enough fighter that we would care if he had dark skin and, you know, more traditional Mexican features and black hair?
I don't think so.
We would care. I don't think we would care at all.
I don't think he's that special
as a fighter, as a product fighter, somebody you can market.
Angulo should have that type of, you know, stigma of fight fans coming out, you know, 11,000 people showing up. Angulo is an exciting fighter, not the most technically sound fighter, but he's definitely a guy that's going to deliver at 154, a vicious puncher, a guy that's willing to go in there. Now, don't get me wrong. Canelo showed, hey, he likes to mix it up. He has the temperament of a fighter. You know, he's not going to let you get away with punching him in the back of the head. He's going to do what he's got to do to try to get you out of there. There is no way in hell did he not try to get Matthew Haddon out of there. But the punching power is really not there. The boxing skills, he's very accurate. I can't take that away from him, Gabriel. Very accurate in his punching ability. He knows how to set him up. He knows exactly where to put him at. But it's just it makes you go like, are those winter gloves that he's wearing that Eric Morales wore against Barrera? Could that be a factor? Should he be wearing the Reyes gloves? Should he be wearing the Everlast gloves that have been making a huge difference in their design and paddings? I don't know. There's a lot of questions on this kid, and we may be bagging on him a little bit of how his performance was Saturday. Don't get me wrong. It was a spectacular performance. He did a great, great job. He kept us entertained, but it makes you wonder, could he be a little rushed, a little too early, and some people are just not seeing the headlights that this guy is going to derail off the road and crash?
That's the thing. I mean, you look at the top 10, man, and you go, even just,
holy,
you know, just the cream of the crop. Yeah, the cream of the crop of 154, Angulo, Vonis Martirosyan, James Kirkland,
ooh,
Austin Trout.
Austin Trout.
Yeah, I mean, is there any doubt that any of these guys beat him? You know, I mean, even some people are saying Ryan Rhodes could take him out, you know, the English fighter.
Vince Martirosyan, you know, at this moment, you know?
Yeah, I think all these guys, would, and Angulo and Kirkland, that would be just mean to put him in with those guys. Because I know Kirkland's coming back, and there's a lot to be made. We'll talk about him later when we have his trainer on. You know, it's hard to tell what's going on with him with 34 seconds worth of tape in 2 years. But, I mean, I got the sense, just talking to him right after the fight, he would have gotten in there with Canelo the same night and probably done pretty well. I don't think that Canelo could handle that kind of power and that kind of pressure. You know, Matthew Haddon was getting to him late as he tired and was landing flush. If Matthew Haddon had power, it might have been a different story. You know, he was landing the 1-2, like, right on his face, over and over again, you know. And
yeah,
he can't crack an egg, so it didn't really matter. But even a Louis Colazzo against Canelo would be a problem.
Exactly.
You know, and so I don't want to be down on the guy because I think we need ticket sellers. I think, you know, he's important to the future of our sport in that regard. But at the same time, it's kind of how I feel about Cotto, you know, Mayorga. Yeah, it's a good fight. It's exciting. It's being excellently, you know, wonderfully promoted by Bob Arum and Don King. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Dennis Miller used to make a joke about, like, Kmart and the Blue Light Special. And, you know, everything's 2-for-1 for the Blue Light Special. Yeah, well, 2 of shit is still shit.
Right.
You know? And if they really want to screw you, they'll give you 3 of these things. And,
yeah, I like those Blue Light Specials.
I do, too. I do, too. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, it's really well promoted and everything, but you know, at the end of the day, it's still a retread fight, you know, against Cotto and a guy that everybody else has beat too, you know. And to me, with Canelo, you know, he's fighting guys that are set up to beat him, and he's doing it in, you know, I guess, exciting fashion, and that he wants to mix it up. But is it really that exciting when you know no matter how much the other guy hits him, it isn't going to do anything?
Definitely.
Really.
You know, exactly. You know, really quick, fight fans, you want to call in? We have our next guest that's in line right now. I'm going to patch him in just a moment right here. But if you want to call in, 347-215-7598. I see a lot of callers that are on hold right now. We're going to go down the line and patch everybody in because this is 3 hours of boxing talk. This is something that we love to do here on Leaving the Ring. So stay tight, man. Don't hang up. But let's get our next guest in right now. A very top prospect, an amateur, a very decorated amateur, Aaron Garcia. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Good, right here. Chilling here in San Diego. How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. How's it over there? How's the weather in San Diego right now, brother?
It's beautiful, man. Can't complain. It's always 80 degrees all year round. It's just beautiful right here, man. It's great.
Get out, Lord. Rub it in, man. Well, welcome to the show, man. I'm Dave Duenas, and I got my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, feature writer for Max Boxing. You had your last fight in the Palm Casinos Resort in Las Vegas. You were against Alejandro Lopez, which is a tough guy, man. I mean, this guy, you know, he had only lost once, I believe, and you went out there and you beat him on a majority decision in 4 rounds. How good did it feel to be back into the ring again?
That felt great, man. Stepping into that ring, as soon as I did, I like told myself, I yelled out to myself and a little bit loud too where people could see me. I felt so great getting up in that ring. I was like, I couldn't, I was trying to, I don't want to cuss, but I was like, yeah, I'm back here. I was so, so energized and so full of confidence. I was so happy to be in that ring again. I can't explain it, man. It was really exciting for me that day.
You know, as an American fighter here in the amateurs, you know, a lot of times now Americans are not even going through the whole amateur route. They're stopping and at mid-career and they're jumping off. But you have one of the longest amateur American careers here in the States. Tell us a little bit about that, man, because I heard that when you went down to the wild card, all fighters in wild card, it almost sounded like they stopped because everybody knew Aaron Garcia, holy shit, this dude's back.
Yeah, man, I'm telling you, the amateurs is fun, man. You can't ask for more. It's a great, great, fun sport, especially as a kid growing up. You know, all you want to do is travel, and especially for the USA committee, you get on the elite fighters, they pay for everything, and you just travel. You just travel and enjoy, go to countries, and I was enjoying every single minute of an amateur, so I couldn't, like, I was so happy. I was so happy, so excited. You know, I get a little bit of money, take me everywhere, all over the world. So it's fun, man. It's very fun being an amateur.
Now, I'm going to pass it over right now. I got one more question for you, and I'm going to pass it over here to my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. In terms right now of Aaron, you know, you fought on a top-ranked card. What's going on right now? I mean, is there any talks of you signing with Top Rank, I mean, or any other promotional group? Or are you just filling out the promotions out there right now?
Honestly, I have this, my coach, my manager, Vince Parra, I guess they want to talk to him about me. I just been hearing that they're like very excited, you know, they're very excited, Top Rank, you know. I mean, I think I'm alive. They gave me this shot, and everything was planned, but they're talking to him about it. They say that maybe they want to work with me and stuff like that. Some other things are – it just opened a big door for me. You know, I'm so thankful that this win helped me a lot. I'm just very thankful for this shot they gave me. So this opened a lot of doors, and they're talking about a lot of things about me now. So I'm so thankful right now.
Absolutely, brother. Gabriel?
I'm just curious how it feels to, like, you know, David told me that, you know, you went back to the wild card and guys were just excited to have you back in the game. And what's it like to know that, you know, I know a couple guys that they've stepped away from the game and then they come back and it's always kind of rough. What was that like getting that kind of reception and knowing that you were missed and that people are looking forward to seeing you get back to where you know, the road that you were on?
Man, it's like, it's hard to explain, man. I missed it a lot. I was gone and I was just doing a lot of things. A lot of things were coming in my way, you know, a lot of bad things, and I was just trying to roll with the punches, and everything, you know, led me up to this year right here, and I'm thinking, I'm so thankful right now, thankful that everything's going good right now, and I'm just training real hard right now, man, I'm ready to go, I'm training real, real hard, and this is like my last shot right here, and I'm going to give everything I have, and I know I'm gonna do something big in boxing.
You know, a featherweight here. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Gabriel.
Oh, I'm just curious, you know, what the plan is in terms of how fast do they want to move you? How often do they want you to be fighting?
Honestly, I think we want to fight as soon as we can. Like, hopefully, once a month. And we're trying to get this ball rolling. You know, like I said, like we were talking earlier, a lot of amateur experience, a lot, and I just feel like I'm a veteran, and I feel real, real good right now. You know, I have no punches in me. I'm so ready to go. And we want to go as fast as we can. We were trying to get a lot of fights and hopefully start fighting next year for contenders and rank fighters.
Aaron, let's talk a little bit about what happened. Why did you stop?
Just a lot of things. You know, a lot of promotional things went bad. I was struggling to get a fight. You know, just, I don't know. Honestly, it was just weird. They stopped going. I kept on training. It was like people didn't want to they weren't trying to give me a chance. I don't know what it was. Honestly, I just, you know, it was real hard to get fight. And
was
then
the timing,
I just, like,
you
man.
Do you think the timing was bad for you at that moment, or could it have been that your first loss? You think people fell off, you know, off the train when you got your first loft back in 2006?
I think that's exactly what it was. You know, there are a lot of expectations, and I'm sorry that I let a lot of people down. You know, I really am, and I think that's exactly what it was. But now I'm back. It's a whole different person, a whole different time. So I'm ready, man. I'm ready to give 110% on every fight. Just keep on training. That's what I keep telling myself. Stay in shape, and I'll be ready, man. I'm telling you, I'm experienced. I'm an experienced fighter. You know, I've sparred with the best. Like I said, I'm very, very ready to go.
Are you refreshed? Do you feel refreshed? Do you feel like a different Aaron Garcia? I mean, you're training with Vincent Parra, who's also Marcito Ayesta's trainer and manager, and he's definitely doing a great movement with Marcito. Do you feel different? Do you feel like, you know what, this is a new Aaron Garcia, or are you still shaking off some of the cobwebs and some of the distaste that you have back when you decided to hang up the gloves for a minute?
No, I feel like a rejuvenated Aaron Garcia. Honestly, I feel great, man. This is like a whole different Aaron. I feel like I'm back here training in San Diego, training with Vincent. It's like he gave me so much confidence. Just everything is different, man. Like, different people. I feel like a rejuvenated Aaron, like a brand new Aaron. Like I have never fought before. Like I'm feeling like I'm a very young, freaking ready to make my debut. And I feel ready, hungry for this, man. I'm very hungry.
Who are some of the names that you got in the amateur days?
Rios. I fought him twice. Brandon Rios. I fought a lot of people. Vicente Escobedo. I fought Francisco Bojaro. Remember him from the 2004, I believe? Yeah, fought him. So, you know, it's a lot of people, fighters. I fought a lot of amateurs. I beat them, actually, most of them. And so, like I said, you know, I'm brand new Aaron right here.
Man, I'm excited, brother. You know, I was trying to find some tape on you on YouTube, but I couldn't really find anything. I'll see if I can talk to Felipe to maybe, you know, shoot something down over here on Leaving the Ring, man. I wish you for all the success, man. I can't wait to get you to see you in the ring, and hopefully it's soon. And I hope everything, man, just kind of storms your way and you continue getting back in the ring and you continue getting success.
Thank you so much, man. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me right here. I'm so appreciated for this, and I just thank you a lot, man. Thank you for everything.
Hey, thank you, brother. You take care.
Pleasure, you man. Too. Good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Amateur star and now prospect Aaron Garcia gets on live with us here on Leaving in the Ring. And talks to us a little bit. You know, this guy was really, really had the record here, Gabriel, of, you know, being one of the longest amateur fighters and decorated, you know, amateur fighters that United States has had. You know, in terms of keeping amateurs in the game for a distance, it's not rare anymore. You know what I mean? It's not common. I'm sorry. It's not a common thing anymore because so many amateur fighters are looking at the pot food with money in it in the rainbow. That they're like, yo, they're chasing the waterfalls, you know? And Aaron decided to say, no, I'm not going to do that. Now, he had some mishaps and some bumps here. He had two draws and one loss. He was KO'd back in 06. But this is a sign of a warrior. He says, you know what? Okay, I need to take a step back. Things are not swaying my way. And I think what some people don't understand is this boxing game is a physical, and you have to have your body in tremendous shape. You have to really work on your skills. You got to fine tune them, but mentally you have to be sharp as well. You know, if you're a young man and you're trying to get your name out there, and you're having promotional problems, which means that you got a fight scheduled and then it gets canceled. That means now it messes up your training camp, you know, because you could overtrain or you're working on a strategy that's not going to work for a particular fighter that they're going to throw in again. There's so many things against you as a young fighter trying to make it in this game. And that's where the mental part comes in, because that could really honestly mess you up when you decide to get in the ring, because now your mind's like all over the place because you've stressed so much. This is a mental game, and a lot of people don't understand and how mental it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're not, you know, 100% in shape, basically, you're not going to succeed. And if you got to step away, remember we talked with, and I've actually been transcribing that interview today with Andy Lee. We talked about
right.
John Duddy, and
Duddy got into the gym and realized, I'm just not into this anymore. I can't do this. And physically, I imagine he was still able to go, but mentally he wasn't able to go. And if you're in that place, man, that's the first time. That's the surest way to get hurt, is to not be mentally ready to go. And sure enough, you know, the guy retires because of it. So it's, I can understand where, you know, that whole situation of if you're not ready to go, you're not ready to go. And you got to get to a place where you are. It'll be interesting to see, you know, 10-2, you know, or something, rather 10-1 and, you know, two draws, is 28. You know, let's see where he can go at that age, you know, and how fast he can get back to where he would like to be. Sometimes, you know, your mind kind of goes, I want to do this. Your body may not be able to. And also the opportunities. He's a hell of an amateur. It's got a, you know, is obviously a good fighter. It becomes that risk versus reward thing, kind of like we talked with Louis Colato. Who's going to want to put him in with their guy? You know, yeah, he's 10-1, two draws, but he's better than that record. You really want to put him in against your guy, you know, on Showbox,
right,
that you're trying to showcase, and all of a sudden you get, you get screwed, you know, because the guy's better than you realize. It'd be interesting to see his road back. But, you know, I just love hearing a guy that's so thankful, not just being on our show, but being back in the game, being back in the
right
gym and in the mix as a fighter. That
and
energy, enthusiasm, yeah, it's just palpable. You know, you can hear it in his voice. Like, just thank you, you know. And he's not just thanking us. He's thanking, you know, the gods for giving him this second shot. So, you know, I wish him well, man. It's a good story.
Absolutely. And really quick, Gary Shaw Boxing on Twitter just you know, shouted out that Sergey does have access to every place on the property. He chose to eat at the cafe because he has his chef making him special meals, saying that it was whoever had reported that he's, you know, not given the finer things at the hotel, it's a complete lie. You know, they reported that Sergey eating at the employee cafe has no idea what they were reporting. Hey, man, sorry, don't kill the messengers.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just, you know, well, I'll let Steve continue on. That's his story, and I'm sure he'll have something to say about it. I'll just leave it at that.
Absolutely.
Leave it at that.
You know, if you want to call in and talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Dwenison, Gable Montoya, you sure can. Phone lines are open, 347-215-7598. I did see some of the calls that were on hold. I apologize. They fell off because they were on hold for quite a minute. We try to squeeze in as much as we can, but we do have a packed show here today, and we still got a lot of stuff to cover. We got a lot of boxing here to talk about, especially with the fights that are coming up. So let's break down and analyze some of these fights that are happening this Saturday night. First ones you guys want to go with, I don't know. Gabriel, which one should we break down for that's happening this Saturday night?
Let's go with the Showtime or with the HBO card. Let's break that down. There's some good fights there.
Go right ahead, brother.
Sorry, I'm just getting a text from a fighter. I think it was actually reported today that there was some idea that Michael Katsidas wasn't going to be able to be in the Robert Guerrero fight, that he'd been injured and was having to pull out. And it's, you know, I'm just being assured. I think Steve put it on his Twitter and a few other places mentioned it. But just to reiterate it, that fight's going on as scheduled. It was a small cut and nothing to be worried about. So that Action Heroes fight will actually go on as scheduled.
Don't scare me.
Yeah, I know. After Winky Wright pulled out, you know, you started to think like, man, like, what's going on with that card? You know, and then like one more fight goes away, and all of a sudden, you know, things go haywire. But
exactly.
Let's break down this card. I think this underfight card will feature between Andy Lee and Craig McEwen is as good as they come, man. A lot of people were kind of down on it. You know, for me, I was just wondering, like, what? I don't really understand, you know, HBO's thinking when it was Lee Duddy. I was like, Duddy, really? But when you look at it, this is a fight of the year kind of fight. They fought once before in the amateurs. Lee pulled that one out. As Manny Stewart said, he's a better technical boxer. I think he's also fought Andy Lee. I think he's fought a better level of competition. You know, I mean, they both have fought Brian Vera. That's their common opponent. You know, McEwen beat him. Lee didn't.
But I think in terms of styles and experience and who he's been working with over the years, I tend to favor Lee in that regard. You know, the wild card gym is full of really good guys to spar with and work with, but a lot of them aren't in that weight class. A lot of them are, you know, kind of in the smaller weight classes. And with McEwen, you know, he's got Roach in his corner, which is great. He's a hell of a tactician, but you know, the knock on McEwen is that he hasn't really reached his full potential. He doesn't work that hard in the gym to get in the shape that he needs to be. And apparently this time he is in great shape and he is ready to go and he understands the opportunity ahead of him. But again, you know, when you get back to the sweet science of it all, these punches are straight punches. He's got probably better one-punch power. I think a higher IQ. As a boxer, he can make adjustments. And after that loss, he really went and found himself and got some maturity under him and a solid work ethic that he's always really had. It's just kind of solidified. So for me, I'm taking Andy Lee by late stoppage in that fight.
You know, I like this fight a whole lot, and you're absolutely right. When you talk about the wild card, you know, you're going to get some great sparring, but you have a level of certain weight classes that are going in there because of a certain fighter that campaigns out of that gym. That it makes you can't always bank on a particular gym because the gym is not going to win the fight for you. It has to be the fighter to win that fight. Andy Lee, you know, is a guy that we've seen numerous times under the tutelage of Manny Stewart, but I still look at Lee where he gets hit a lot and he still can get hurt and he can still get cut. You know, Craig as well, you know, is a guy that's going to be you're right. He doesn't have the sharper punches, so Lee does come down that pipe. But I think it comes into play of who lands the bigger shot at the right time, at the right moment. I think timing really has to go with this fight, in my opinion, is who's going to land the bigger shot to really head off, who's going to really take ahead of that bout, you know. But I'm going to go with you here, Gabriel. I'm going to have to agree with you. I got Andy Lee taking this fight as well.
You know, there's somebody in our chat room, Captain Negativity, I like to refer to him as. He says if Andy Lee loses this fight, he needs to give it up. And this is definitely a crossroads fight. You know, for
right.
Both these guys, for the loser, they're really going to have to rebuild. But these are guys in the middle. More, you know, McEwen's more of a 54-pounder, but he's heading up into that top 10. He's certainly a top 20 guy that's on his way. He's not a slouch. By any means. These guys would not be in this position if they were. To throw guys on the scrap heap when they lose is just wrong. It's a good fight. And if it's a really good fight and it's competitive and it goes down the line and one of them happens to lose, that doesn't mean you throw them on the scrap heap.
This is not a top-tier fight. This is a fight. That's the thing that some folks got to understand. You know, this is a level of fight where you're going to get something good out of it, you know? I mean, a lot of fights that we have gotten in the past have not been – I think the most shittiest fights that we've seen that we are not satisfied is when you get two of the best in the ring because it's more of a chess match rather than a fight.
Exactly. And also, you know, it is kind of a top-tier fight in that the winner of this more than likely is going to end up being the next opponent for Sergio Martinez. That's probably one of the reasons why it's happening as a co-feature. You know, it's because the winner of this guy is going to move on to bigger and better things, you know, and probably get that shot. And it's a natural way of promoting if you're a network is here's the guy that's a clear threat, you know, because the bottom line is when Martinez knocked out Paul Williams, the number one question was where does he go next? And, you know, a lot of people said Dmitry Pirog, myself included, but that's probably not going to happen. He's fighting in Russia now. There's some issue about him getting to HBO. We're not sure. I thought he was going to be on the first quarter. Now it's looking like not. The year
right.
is getting booked out, and Pirog doesn't seem to be on that horizon. They're looking for other ways to get him paid. So, and that's not on Pirog. Pirog wants to be here fighting in America on HBO or Showtime. He wants to be in the U.S., so don't trash him for that. But where else does Martinez go? We know Floyd is going to be tied up for a little while with his court issues, plus the fight we all really want to see him in with is Pacquiao, plus we're hearing rumors that he's going to have a tune-up fight with Paul Spadafora, and that is actually, those rumors keep getting louder and louder and louder. Sometimes when there's smoke, there's fire. He's probably
right.
going to take a tune-up before Manny because he's been gone so long, even though that's his own damn fault. So where does Martinez go? And he's fought a really tough road of of opponents headed to the middleweight title and headed to this fight. I think it would be, for lack of a better word, nice of HBO to kind of give him an opponent that maybe isn't the most dangerous guy on the planet, but that is an exciting style that we can enjoy Martinez one more fight while he waits for a bigger money fight to emerge. I think that's only fair. You know, every once in a while a champ has to get that kind of treatment. And Martinez hasn't been given that. You know, he was rewarded with a tougher fight than anybody else wants to take. Zendurek is not an easy fight at all. It's a very dangerous fight. So
no, in terms
why,
of
you don't throw these guys on the scrap heap.
Right. In terms of Martinez getting a tougher fight, he is no way you could say this is an HBO fighter being protected. This is not a Berto. You know, this is not any other HBO fighter that we've seen in the past get protected. You know, Martinez is getting a fight. Now, when I talk about top tier, I mean like a big name or pound for pound. You know, Andy Lee and Craig are not pound for pound. You know, you're not going to label them as pound for pound, but you're going to have to label them as tough contenders, guys that make up the division. You know, you have to have guys that make up the division. There's a few words in the vocabulary of boxing fans that have been dismissed and forgotten. The word contender. That's really been lost because now we have title holders and stuff, you know. And Lee and Craig are definitely contenders. And this should be a very entertaining fight. I don't think you're going to be disappointed. I hope we're not disappointed. Let's not jinx this one here, you know, when we end up getting a Broner and De Leon. I think we're going to be...
There's no chance of that. That's an anomaly. That was just a special kind of fight. I don't think we're going to get that. Both these guys, it's Ireland versus Scotland, and it really is an elimination fight in a lot of ways. I mean, if you look at it, Martinez was set free by the WBC when they stole his belt and took it and gave it to the Cesar Chavez, Sebastian Zivic winner. Well, actually, Zivic now has the belt. He's now a middleweight champion, according to the WBC. Martinez is now free to make the fights that he wants to make. And as long as he keeps winning, he's the middleweight champion of the world. And nobody can take that away from him. They're going to have to try. So he's in kind of a good position where he can say, you know what, I'm going to fight Andy Lee or I'm going to fight Craig McEwen next. And you know what, that's my right. And I'm the middleweight champion. I get to call the shots. It'll be interesting. You know, and that'd be a big money fight on the East Coast. You know, those guys... Not so much McEwen, but Andy Lee had a nice following out on the East Coast. He'd fought out there before, and there's an Irish contingent out there that will come see him fight for the middleweight title. So I think it's very logical. Who do you like in the main event?
Oh, man. This is going to – you know what? This is going to be a very entertaining main event. I want to get into this, but I know our guest –
We got Kenny Adams here in about 30 minutes.
Okay.
Why don't I give him a call now? He's kind of an early riser anyway, so I'll give him a shot. He's probably ready, and I'll be right back.
Go right ahead. You know, and going back right here with Martinez and Sergey is I like this fight a whole lot. I know a lot of people are saying like, well, we don't really know the opponent. We've never heard of him, and we've said, hey, go back and watch some tape on this kid because he does bring something here to the table that's going to be really difficult. I mean, I've spoken to a few fight fans and on emails that are picking, you know, Sergey to beat Sergio Martinez. I really like this fight. Before I break it down, we're going to see if Gable's got our next guest, which is Kenny Adams, who could talk to us a little bit, who is the trainer of another junior middleweight right now, but he came in as a middleweight in his last fight in Anaheim on the undercard.
Never back.
How you doing there?
Let me do an introduction. Just I was trying to whisper underneath your talking. Sorry there, Dave. I'm here with legendary trainer Kenny Adams, who's trained such great fighters, Edwin Valero. But now he's working with a young up-and-comer by the name of James Kirkland that we're all excited. Welcome to Leave It in the Ring, Kenny. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
How you doing there, Kenny?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good.
Co-host Dave Duenas. Sorry, I didn't introduce you. Let's just jump right into it, Kenny. 34 seconds isn't a lot to be able to tell where James Kirkland is at, but You've been with him for a little while now, training him. Give us your assessment of what you saw on Saturday.
Well, what I really thought there that this Saturday was that he's a hard worker. He trains very, very hard, and he pushed himself real hard to get himself in condition and actually to lose his weight. And all this was good, and I think personally that he also made an attempt to try to work on some things that we had worked on. And, of course, once again, 33 seconds is not long, but I did see a right hook from him, which he basically had not really thrown much of a hook at all in any of his other fights. And it's something that I think he was a little skeptical of using, but he really turned it on, and his hook came across real good. So I was very pleased for that. That showed some things that he's working toward to try to get better. And so it's just like when he came to me, I'd already knew that he could fight already. He was a good fighter. All he needed to do was work on some little finer points, such as defense, and just make his offense a lot better. So, these are things that you try to work with on a fighter. And basically, he picks up, and he's a hard worker. And like I said, he picks up pretty quickly, you know.
You've worked with some great names in the sport of boxing. You know, Freddie Norwood, Vince Phillips, Kennedy McKinney, Ray Mercer. You worked with Diego Corrales as well.
Yes, I did.
Where do you put James's talent level, you know, work ethic, and just overall package? I know it's kind of early to tell. He's still kind of crossing over into, like, contender land and heading towards a championship, hopefully. Where do you rate him in there in terms of just his capability of getting to a top level?
I rate him right up at the top, even during the years of working with some of the guys. I've always had good work ethics out of my fighters. I've primarily pushed them to have that, but he's right there with Edwin Valero, one of the hardest working guys you could run into. He was just a hard, hard worker. Eddie Cook was a hard worker. Al Cole, hard worker. Well, all these guys, McKinney, at a certain time, Vince Phillips, all these guys, Charles Murray, Frankie Lyles, a lot of these guys were hard, hard workers. But I think when you talk about someone that just takes it and just takes it to the next level, I think Valero and Kirkland has to be the kind that does it. Also, as a young man, I've got another young, quite a few young charges, a cat named Letty Letty, and a young man named Bossy Shamir. These guys are along that same line. They all work very, very hard at pushing to the next level. And I think those are important things from fighters. But sometimes these are guys you don't have to push. They try to be first in everything they do, you know.
Now, with James, the thing I noticed, we talked about this on Saturday, one of the things I thought was an issue was his balance. You know, he tended to get overexcited and kind of get over his front foot and really kind of reach with some of his punches. Has that been a big thing with you, is kind of fixing that balance? And how do you maintain that natural aggression, that go-go-go that he has in the ring? How do you maintain that while getting him to be still kind of technical?
Well, primarily what I've tried to do is try to cut down the combination of as many he wants to throw. If you can put 2, 3, and 4 together, and that's where we do try to talk about balance and position of his feet and things of that nature. But, you know, I don't want to take that natural aggression that he has. You can't take that. The only thing I can do is kind of use some type of modification and working with him. And I've kind of got to the point, you know, where you do certain shots and you do certain things, and what you do punches that will fall and put you out of balance. You throw another punch that puts you on balance. So those are the things that we have to work to do. We work from one punch to the other to put on balance. And I think we're leading toward that, too, and that's one of the things I've been working on. And like I said, it's going to take a little while, though. It'll take a little time, and at the same time, you know, we're trying to get in fights, and he wants to fight, like he did the other night. After he stopped that guy quick, he wanted to fight again when the rest of the fights is over. He said he wanted another fight, you know. So, I mean, he's just trying to hold this down, but you don't want to hold his aggression. You want to let it go, you know. It's just some things maybe you're not gonna change with people. So, it's no sense in trying to, you know, really.
Kenny, how do you relax a fighter like that is so in love with a fighting, you know, because a lot of times there's fighters that like to fight, but they're fighting for a cause to get out. But then you got these rare fighters that love to fight, you know, and they just, you know, you get a sense that if there wasn't boxing in their life, they would be somewhere bad in their life.
Well, you know, I think one thing too has to come with that is you learn, you're teaching people, you talk about breathing. Breathing is very important, how to blow the, when you throw the punch, how you blow it out, and you don't hold it, and you don't hold it to your nose. When you get ready to throw a punch, you know, you just blow it out, and you try to get them to learn to be relaxed in the sense of learning to breathe properly, such as, you know, he runs with the mouthpiece, continuously works with it, and, you know, these are little practice, you practice little movements and things of that nature that makes sure that I learn how to be a little boy. And you work, when you're working with the mitt and you do the pad work with him, you try to make him learn to be relaxed and kind of be in control of himself. And like I said, that's just something that takes time. And I think eventually it'll smooth out. And as a matter of fact, I've seen just a little bit of it that is happening even as we speak, you know. So I'm saying that, you know, I think it'll eventually be okay. I mean, he's still going to have that aggression. And that's one thing you don't want to take from him. Like I told him when I first got him, you already know how to fight. Ann Wolf did a great job with him, and she had did him and had him in condition all the time. And you know, he was 20 when I came. He got it, right? He was 25-0 with 22 knockouts. So, hey, wasn't nothing to change. All I want to do is improve on what he has now and on what we want to do. And like I said, in those things and changing and improving is more to learn how to breathe a little better, relax a little more. Yet and still, that's his strong point, is that he's relaxed. He is still, he feels more relaxed when he's able to throw a lot of punches, you know?
No, they're saying he's scheduled to get back into the ring on the 18th. Now, if that's so, does he rest for this time being that he just fought on Saturday, or does he go back and maybe work on something, or do you put him back to spar just for a couple of days? How does that work?
Well, what we have to do now is just continuously work toward getting him in shape and running him and getting him some sparring and working on some things, because, like I said, the other night wasn't much of a test. We spent 20, 25 minutes warming up, more warming up than it did for the fight. So, you know, the guy, when you saw him fight, I think you can even say yourself, he looked like he had not lost a beat. You know, he really, really looked like he had not lost a beat. As a matter of fact, he looked real good with his punches. His balance was pretty good and everything. He had a willing guy in front of him that just put everything in perspective for him. You know, so now that's really not a bad way, because what it means is we'll just have a little extra time to kind of move. In other words, we're going to mold and put these things right back together. So we're going to keep moving and keep moving on, because he's really likes looking at tapes and doing some things. So he's a student of the game, you know. So, no, not a problem there.
How soon, I mean, for you, the progression, I mean, I don't know if you're a part of that process with Cameron Duncan and Mike Miller as managers, but for the next opponent, do you want to step it up to a guy that can give him some resistance, or do you still want to shake that rust?
Well, we still want to shake the rust a little bit. I think we're going to have to mold it. You know, you don't just – I mean, you've got a great commodity. You don't want to rush things in a sense. And you know, and as long as we get somebody that's fairly compatible, I think I'm along with that. But once again, that's where Duncan and Miller come in, and that's where their job be. But yet and still, they always ask me my input, so we're all in this together, you know. And then with James also, James doesn't care if he falls King Kong tomorrow. With him, King Kong would be just right for him, you know. But once again, it's our job, or especially the management, in a sense, it's our job to protect him too, you know.
Right, in a sense, and by protect him, it's not just keep feeding him. You know, guys that can.
Oh, we don't want to feed him. We want to step up to the next level. We want to be competitive and know that we're fighting someone that is worth saying stepping up to the ring and being the best fighter they can be. Because I think there's no doubt in my mind at this point in time, James, he can be and will probably be the best fighter in this era that comes along. He's going to be more exciting and even better than Pacquiao.
In terms of sparring, Adam, what kind of opponents do you put him in there? I mean, because he holds so much power and he's so aggressive and he's so explosive. Do you put him in with bigger guys that can kind of dish it out with them and kind of maintain his aggression to hold him off a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I do. I do put him in with bigger guys, yeah. He has to have bigger guys, yeah. I either have bigger guys with him or I do control sparring also. I have a training that I do. I use control sparring, and in control sparring, we do single shots at a time. We block parry kicks, and I may put those heavy pads on both guys, him and the other guy, and work it in that sequence so much, you know. And it seems that it works very well. I used that before in doing a lot of my fighters. I do the same way. I use them in that manner. I can work with a little speed and put a guy smaller than him, or say when, which I have done that. Even with James, I had a smaller guy, but I do it in a controlled manner. And so when you do it in that manner, you're able to get across what you need to do anyway. You got guys faster. He learns to get a little more speed himself, and at the same time, you go single shots at a time or double shots at a time, but you have more protection there, you know?
You know, when we talk about, you know, speed and putting in a smaller guy in there with Kirtland, is it also a way of teaching him how to cut the ring off? I mean, because the big criticism of James before he had went to jail was that everybody was instrumental for him. They were there to be knocked out, and fight fans wondered how well would he do against a counterpuncher or a guy that had some movement. How do you make sure that his balance and he's able to cut off the ring and catch up to an opponent like that?
Well, that's another teaching that as I talked about before, in teaching someone like that, there are ways that you step up and you cut people out. And I mean, and it is an art, but you can step up and cut a guy out, and you can walk right a guy and walk him right to a corner, or wide to the rope and make him step towards you and still can't get away from you. So these are things that we work on too, and stepping left, stepping right, cutting a guy out, stepping up with throwing the proper punches where you have certain punches, leaper hooks you throw, and you also, like I said, you step up, the guy moves to the right, you just step up with your left foot and step and cut him off. You try to move to the right, you step over with the right and bring your left up, and you get your balance back on again. And so these are things that I work on, and we know how to cut people off, so we're all working on those things too. So you, like they say too, you can run, but you can't hide.
That's for sure, man.
You've got another guy too that I'm interested in Matt Korobov. Where's he at right now in terms of his development? I know he's got a fight coming up pretty soon here.
Well, you know, I don't train him anymore. So.
Oh, you don't train him anymore?
I
didn't realize that.
Mike McCullum is training him now, and so.
Oh, I had no idea. I'm sorry about that.
No, I work in a manner is that when I'm working toward training a guy, I'm not listening when somebody else tells me how to train him. If you can't follow my sheet of music, then you need to go to somebody else. That's the way it worked with us. Yeah, they start when you start second guessing what I'm doing, then you need to go to somebody else. That's the way it works.
You have a military background, right? That's kind of where your foundation of discipline has come from. And
no, I don't know if it really came from the military.
Is that right?
I had my great aunt raised me, and you talk about a disciplinarian.
There was
a disciplinarian. I probably was very much just as disciplined when I went in the army. When I got in there, but of course, once again, yes, probably it added to that, no doubt, the military, because you know, being an airborne ranger and always being in a position, I was a drill instructor for many years, and at the same time, all these things you talked about discipline. You know, when you work behind enemy lines and you work in five man teams, you have to learn to be disciplined, and you have to learn to also have camaraderie where you actually work as a team with people, because if you don't, you're going to get killed or die. So a lot of these things play a role in that. And that's, and I think that'll bring up with my aunt at the same time with a lot of discipline that she had with me and the discipline, yes, that I had in the Army. And it did bring it in along with boxing, and it kind of makes me a little hardcore. And, you know, at times it has not served me well because a lot of people have the tendency to think that I'm a little bit too tough and rough on them. But, you know, over the years, though, I have learned to kind of mellow some, and I kind of live and live with things now, and I kind of, you know, and I compromise more, much more now, which is probably better to do it that way, you know, and you get, because you get, you know, if you, you know, like they said, it's not all the time that you get more bees with honey sometimes, so maybe you have to do those things too. So, you know, it's all played a good role with me, and I think it's served well now that I'm working with Kirkland. I think it's served well that I'm learned to compromise and deal with things, and everybody has ideas, and you have to follow suit with them too, you know?
Yeah, it's all a learning process, right? You know, you kind of go along and refine things as you go, and certainly James has learned a lot in the last couple of years, you know, about what he needs to do, you know.
Right.
Before we let you go, you know, I was wondering if you want to speak about Valero. I know you only worked with him briefly, but I only had a chance to watch him work in the gym once, and it blew me away. You know, he's got the hardest handshake of any person I've ever met in my life, but his work ethic was just amazing. Can you just tell us a little bit about what it was like working with him?
Oh yeah, it was always a pleasure the whole time. You know, he even though he was a little very stubborn and hard headed in a sense, but it still he worked hard. When he stepped inside that gym, you wrapped his hands, man. You never had to tell him what to do or how to do it. He always sometimes you had to kind of slow him down. And James is the same way. And he wants to do more than he needs to do sometimes because he just felt like he was never conditioned enough. And it's the same way on the runs and any workouts you gave him. He worked on the strength program. We worked on running, sprints, anything that we did. He wanted to be the first in everything he did. He wanted to be on the top dog. If he ran, he wanted to be the first one. We do your bag drill. He wanted to hit the hardest and go the longest. And him and James kind of fit that same type of mold, you know, that really and truly. That's and it's a pleasure to work with people like that, you know. The only thing is it's kind of slow them down just a little sometimes and say, hey, look here, we don't need all of this because, you know, there's such a phase called burnout. See, that's to be very careful is why you have to kind of control people. And so there are ways you can do that. But like I said, you don't want a guy to get burnt out where he can get overtrained. And then something being overtrained is like training not enough, you know. So this is something you have to be careful at. But I think these guys were very, very much alike. They're like they're made from the same cloth, you know.
That's the one thing you can't teach, right, is that want to.
Just a discipline guy, you know. Just discipline and wanting to be first and everything, you know. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's being very competitive, and I think that's important. And a lot of times, that's the way you separate the champion from the contenders, you know. The guy that really wants to step up and really wants to do it. He really wants it, you know. And you know, here's a guy that got big cojones, you know. You don't have to worry about them. They're not quitters either. And that's why I say the quitters never win, and winners never quit, you know. And that's the way it rolls, you know.
You think that Golden Boy's going to give a shot at Canelo to Kirkland, or do you think you guys going to have to go a different route?
Nah, I don't think that'll ever happen. I don't think they'll even get smelling distance of each other.
Not even a little bit, Adam.
I mean, the only way that'll happen is if somebody that they get all the belts, and then it would be a thing to see who would be the undisputed one. I mean, that would probably be worth quite a bit, you know. So
sure,
that was about the only way I would foresee that happening, you know, for sure.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Well, thank you so much, Kenny. I really appreciate you coming out and coming on the show and talking with us. And I look forward to seeing you hopefully on March 18th out here in Orange County.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for coming on, Kenny. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You know,
wow. Bigger better than Manny Pacquiao. That
wow.
is that's something else right there. That's a bold statement.
A very bold statement, and still we got, you know, I think plenty left in him to find out if that could be possible. You know, it's not impossible, but, he still has a ways to go. You know, I know some fight fans are going to jump on that right away. What are you talking about? Take it easy. Take it easy. Take a breather.
Breathe.
Sit down. Breathe. Now, if you're standing up and you're yelling at your screen, that means you've had too many beers, okay? Sit down and relax. Again, relax, open a beer, and let's talk boxing here on Leave It in the Ring, where it's just not a sport to us, fellas. It's a lifestyle. Now, we got to go back, and thank you very much, Kenny Adams, for coming on and chopping it up with us here on Leave It in the Ring, talking about James Kirtland, because so many of us are, you know, infatuated of what this guy brings to the table. You know, he has really caught the imagination of boxing fans from all over the place, you know, including Gable and myself. Gable being one of the very first guys, or the very first guy to start following
the
up
first.
And covering him.
Michael Swan had interviewed him first, but I was second. I was a very
there
close
you go. See, I was close to that. You know what I mean? I'm a little off sometimes, but sometimes I'm really close when I'm off. But let's go back and let's talk about Saturday night on HBO. We still got the headliner, the main event.
Yes.
And I'm going to go with Gabriel first. If you guys want to call in and give us your pick of what's going to happen on HBO Saturday night, go right ahead, 347-215-7598. But right now we're going to have our host, Gabriel Montoya, give us the breakdown and what he thinks is going to partake on Saturday night on HBO.
You know, I didn't get a chance to see Zinzurek in the gym this time. I've seen him before. He's a hard worker. A lot of people don't really know him. Everybody's kind of bought the party line. Oh, he's boring. He's boring. Well, you know, he's also a winner. The guy is undefeated. He had defended his WBO belt 7 times. He got some injuries. He had an injury, and then he had some promotional issues, sat on a shelf from 2008 to 2010, where he came back and beat Daniel Dawson in a fight that was very much a rust remover, not very exciting fight. He doesn't have a lot of power. He's not the most aggressive guy in the world. But he's a very mobile fighter, southpaw, tall, with a great jab, one of the better jabs in the sport, if not the best jab in the sport. And he's a guy that likes control. You know, he likes to control his distance. You can't really get close to him and rough him up, or he'll kind of hold on to you, push you away, reset, and go back to what he was doing. You know, on the other side, you got Martinez fighting better than he's ever fought in his life. He's at an all-time high. He's, you know, apparently not going to have Gabriel Sarmiento in the corner. Not sure why that is. Sarmiento said it was his personal reasons. I don't think it's anything personal between the two of them. Pablo Sarmiento will be in the corner, who's worked with Martinez all these years.
Right.
You know, get the cut right to it. I'm picking Martinez. I'm picking him by late stoppage. Probably, you know, it's a long shot, the late stoppage. I think he's a bigger, stronger guy, even though he's a little bit shorter at 5'10". But he's just punching with tremendous power. His timing is excellent. His speed is excellent. He's got more of an aggressive style, which may make him open to more mistakes that Zinzurek can score off of. But I think the physical nature that Martinez is going to approach in this fight, and I have watched him in the gym, and that mid-range game that he's been working on and cutting off the ring, and those short punches, which is what I mean by the mid-range game, I think those are going to take its toll. I think he's going to break down Zinzurek, who's not been in a physical fight like this. Maybe with Daniel Santos, a little bit with Joel Julio, but certainly not at middleweight like he's going to be dealing with on Saturday. I think Martinez stops him.
He beats him up. Sergey Zinzurek is really a guy that's under the radar when it comes to fight fans, even hardcore fight fans, you know. You have your category of different type of fans, you know, and you could probably put them in a list of 3 different categories, you know, your casuals to your hardcore to your really, 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 really hardcore. And if you're a really, really, really hardcore fan, you're gonna know Sergey Zinzurek is not a walk in the park. This guy does pose a lot of problems for Martinez, who is, like Gable just mentioned, an ultra high in his career right now, and in his prime. And saying that his trainer, Gabriel, was not going to be in his corner, some folks would probably play into that there may be a little bit of problems. But when you're a professional, and we've seen this in some times before, when there's some, when you have particular fighters that have gotten in the ring without their mentor or their advisor, they're on a level already that they could kind of go on gear and know in their heads what is going to be done, because they've been there with that trainer so many times that now it's really ran by instincts, you know, really ran by a whisper in the ear, you could kind of say. I don't think it's going to pose a whole lot of problems for Sergio Martinez. I've watched him in the gym. I mean, they're working on particular things that they really didn't want to be, you know, kind of exposed out there or even said. But in terms of that, you're not going to see something different for Martinez, but you're going to see what people are going to catch is a confident Martinez. Where in the past, even getting in with Martinez, Paul Williams the first time, to Kermit Cintron, to even Alex Bonilla, you had not a complete confident Martinez. You had a guy that still was trying to find himself and his place in the boxing world. Now he knows his place. Now he knows who he is. You know, there's that saying that a fighter changes when they become a champion. And I think this is pretty well said for Sergio Martinez here, Gable. I think you're right. I think he stops Sergey in the late rounds.
You know, and I think, you know, one guy in our forum or our chat room was saying, well, of course he's going to win. He's fighting a 154-pounder. But if you really watch, you look at the age of these guys, 36, and I believe Zinduric's 34. He's a 6-foot guy. Adding those 6 pounds, look what it did for Martinez. His power went a little bit up. He was a little bit stronger. I don't think that's really going to play a major factor here. I think it's really dismissing who Zinduric is as a fighter. For him to carry, I think he'll be carrying the 160 quite easily. And also,
and he doesn't walk around. I mean, this is the thing, too, that, you know, when we had a chance to talk to his camp, I had a chance to talk to the camp, and they mentioned, you know, Sergey is a big kid. You know, he's walking around way above 160. You know, he just campaigns at 154. He's not going to come in at 154. He's a much, in all honesty, he's a much bigger man than Sergio Martinez. That's why I'm saying, where people, some fight fans are really not knowing what Sergey's bringing to the table, because they've never really have been able to watch him or see him on any type of primetime network and stuff. And when it comes to fight night, you're not going to see Martinez getting away with things. You're going to see a confident Martinez, but you're going to see a strategy from him where he's going to have to figure out, you know, Sergey to a point, because Sergey is going to be there, and he is going to pose a lot of problems because of his arm length. You know, it's a good fight overall. You know, knock it because you're saying that, well, he's fighting a 154-pounder. Go right ahead, but I'm telling you now, this is not a 154-pounder that a promoter, especially having this fighter at an ultra high in his career right now, to be kind of tested with. This to me, Sergey is a guy that you test him when you're bringing him up. You don't test him when he's already on top of the mountain.
Exactly right, and that's the thing. It's, you look at that Williams win, which is a hell of a win, but he got away with that shot because Williams is technically, you know, it's like his defense is like a sieve. You know, it's hard to not, you know, point that out. I mean, the guy was throwing a really low hook, you know, from way at his hip, and he left himself wide open. Both his hands are away from his face. He left himself wide open. And they game planned for that. They saw that and knew that he would not change, and he didn't, and so they beat him.
Right.
But with a guy like Zinduric, who doesn't commit full force to, with power with each shot, he's rarely out of position. He's rarely out of balance. And so you're not going to get him whiffing past you, and then you come back with something very often. It's going to be a process of taking a little bit here and there from him, getting to his body, you know, getting him behind on some points. I fully expect, you know, Martinez to get outboxed a little bit early on and try to figure out how to get past that jab and how to cut off the ring with him and have to take a pound of flesh, as Bobby Ches used to say, in order to, you know, get something done later on in the fight. I think it's going to be that kind of fight. You know, most people will think it's going to be boring, and it might, if Zinduric is winning and Martinez isn't able to solve that puzzle. But I think Martinez is going to look to make it make it a, you know, a better fight than we think it's going to be. And somebody else mentioned in the chat room that 160 is a weak division. I tend to disagree. I think what it is a young division. If you look at the players that are there right now, I mean, Sebastian Zivic is just a guy. You know, I've seen him fight. He's kind of a Euro guy. He's got some power. But, you know, he's not terrible. He's kind of beatable. He's kind of ordinary.
Right.
But he's got a belt that they're thinking, you know, Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. can beat him, which says a lot about how good he is as a fighter. But so if let's say Chavez Jr. gets that fight. He wins. Then you've got a major cash cow, kind of like Canelo, at 160. You know, unfortunately, Bob Arum may not make certain fights, but we'll get to that later. But then you look at, you've got Fernando Guerrero, who's a young 160-pounder. He's kind of a prospect slash contender, making his way up. He's an exciting guy. Matt Korobov, not quite sure where he's going. He's moving a little slower than Cameron Duncan would like him to. I guess now he's even changed trainers, so that kind of says something. Matthew Macklin is right there, is kind of a solid contender. He's in the mix. Andy Lee is about to make a name for himself, maybe get a middleweight title shot. And even if he loses one of these two fights, he's going to be a name that's in play on HBO. And then you've got Danny Jacobs, who's slowly making his way back. There's guys here. You know, Daniel Gill is another guy. And a guy that I'm really excited about, beyond Dmitry Pirog, who's another title holder that's in play, is Gennady Golovkin. That's a guy that is very exciting. And he's great. He's in Europe, but he's got a title. He wants to come to America. That's a guy we might see, you know, face off with Felix Sturm, because they've got, I think, the same version of they've got versions of the same belt. So there's fights to be made. They're just kind of all over the place. They're in Europe. There's guys in development like David Lemieux that are not quite at their full potential. But I think in a year or so, this division is going to be very hot and hotly contested, you know, particularly as Martinez retires and moves on in a year and a half. He doesn't have any more fights left. You're going to see some good fights at 160. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Absolutely, you know, and that's what goes back to contenders. You know, we got to build them. And unfamiliar names, you know. Sometimes some fight fans, they're not familiar with their name. They're going to say, well, I don't know about this guy. So it's going to be a weak fight. I got to call in our next guest. So I'm going to give him a call right now and hopefully answer so that we can get him on. And then we can go on and making our predictions on the other fights that are happening on a Saturday night. Let's see if we can get Vince. Vince Monterosian, who is that the wild card? Huh?
Vonis.
Hello?
Vonis the Great.
Hello?
Hello, Vonis. This is Dave with Leaving the Ring. How you doing, brother?
Oh, hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good, good. How's everything going? How was training today, man?
It was good. We had, cutting down the weight a week before the fight is kind of tough, but, you know, we're getting there. We're good, and I feel great. It was good.
Now, Vons, you're all over the place, you know, on Twitter, and, you know, your publicists are doing a great, fantastic job of keeping your name out there. But keeping your name out there is just not enough. I mean, you have to get the fights. Are you frustrated? I mean, you even got to the point you were calling guys out on Twitter. You were like, yo, I'll fight you. Come on, fight me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had to learn trying to get a land the fight. But, you know, I got to do my talking in the ring and let my people do the talking for me. I wanted big fights and I got to take it step by step, and that's what I'm doing now. And, you know, I decided to do my talking in the ring, and that's what I'm going to do. And I just can't wait to fight on the 19th.
Now, did somebody pull you aside, I mean, from your camp and go, look, don't do that. You know, let us do our job and you do your job in the ring. Did that come down to it?
You know, it was funny because, you know, I tell my, you know, my uncle, everybody gets Google alerts. Every time I say something online, it gets posted, they get alerts. And everybody knows that that's not me because I'm humble. I just like to talk when in the ring. But, you know, I just got pissed off because everybody was getting recognized and I wasn't. And, you know, I think that's my fault than anybody else's. And now I know what I have to do, and that's what I'm going to do. But as far as somebody put me to the side, my dad, I would come downstairs and go, Dad, I just talk crap about Shane Mosley. He's like, why? You know what I mean? So it was like that. So I learned, and it was fun, though.
Right.
It was fun, but, you know, I can't be the bad guy. I'm never the bad guy. I'm a bad guy in the ring, a nightmare, but outside, I just can't be like that.
I know. You know, I mean, I got to tell you, when I saw that, because I met you a few times. I mean, the last time I met you was over there in Hollywood at the Avalon Club. You know, not the Alley
yeah.
Matador, but, you know, we ran into each other. And I got to say, when I saw the Twitter and I go, man, that's not the nightmare. You know, he must be getting really frustrated because nobody kind of wanted to get in the ring with you, you know. But so you go downstairs. Let's go back to that real quick because I got to hear this conversation here. You know, you go
yeah.
back downstairs and you tell your father, hey, I just – you know, started exchanging words with Sugar Shane Mosley. What was the conversation for me? I mean, what was his take about it?
He's like, why? And then I'm like, because I want to fight. He goes, but what have you done to get a fight with Mosley? And I was like, I just want to fight that. You know, he made me look kind of stupid at first. You know, maybe like, you know, Shane Mosley, this is the same guy that you were watching. You know, he came to watch at the Golden Gloves when I was fighting. You know, Shane came and watched me fight. He goes, you know, Shane's a nice guy. You know, he's
right.
not a bad guy for you to talk crap about. He goes, you just do your fighting and let the rankings do their part and let the promoters and managers do the talking for you and just go out there and do what you have to do. And, you know, I had the same talks with my uncle and, you know, they always give me good advice. And sometimes I get hard-headed. I don't listen. I just, you know, I'm like, because I spar with a lot of these guys in the gym. And I do really well against them. And I think, you know, I want to fight. But, you know, my time is coming. And the other day, Bruce Chandler came to the gym, my promoter, my matchmaker, and told me, you know, this is a big year for you. We got good plans. You know, just stay focused and do your training and leave the talking to us. So I was like, okay, I got it. So that's what we're doing.
Absolutely, man.
Just for the record, Vanas, this is Gabe Montoya. That wasn't James Kirkland. That was it was a fake account.
I figured it wasn't James.
Hey, you got a guy that you're fighting, Vladimir Hernandez. He's a bit of a, you know, get back kind of guy, keep you busy kind of guy. You got Saul Roman after that. You guys are fighting for the vacant WBC silver light middleweight title. That's a pretty tough opponent. Have you watched much of that guy? I mean, you know, I know he's got some losses on his record, but he's a serviceable contender
yeah.
with some experience. Have you been looking towards him, or are you just focused in on March 19th and just dealing with that fight?
Well, we're focused on March 19th, but I'm not going to lie. I do have Saul Roman in the back of my mind. I remember a few years ago when Sergio Martinez fought him in Texas. I was on the same card, so I got to see him there. And, you know, I won by knockout, and Sergio won by knockout. He stopped him with a nice body shot. And
yeah.
I know he doesn't take body shots very well. I mean, I've seen him around. You know, I know he went down and up. He's beat some pretty good guys. You know, he's the type of fighter that you don't know who's going to show up. So you got to show up there 100%. I know he's a tough fighter, but, you know, the guy I'm fighting March 19th, you know, yeah, he has some pop. He got some power. So we're focused on that fight now. And after that one, then we'll focus on Saul Roman. But right now, Baldomir is on my list.
What do you know about him? Have you seen any tape of him? Have you checked him out at all? I
saw a little bit of it today in the gym before we started training to see what we need to work on. And he throws a lot of hooks. He throws a lot of overhand rights. And, you know, and I got to keep my hands up and just be careful. You know, he throws those haymakers, a lot of them. So you just got to be careful and, you know, just stay focused and stick to the game plan.
Were you part of Craig McEwen's training camp, getting ready for Andy Lee?
For this fight, I got a black eye right now, bro. I've been sparring with light heavyweight undefeated contenders. I helped Daniel Jacobs get ready for his fight. I helped Kid Chocolate get ready for his fight, and I helped Craig McEwen get ready for his fight.
Wow.
So I spar with all these guys in the gym, and Roberto Garcia, who's getting ready to fight. I've been sparring with all these guys in the gym, and it's been great sparring. And I brought this other guy. His name is Lee, who's helping me a lot. Lee Reyes, I believe his name is. And he actually fights a little bit like Baldomir. I've been sparring with these, you know, world-class fighters, and it's helped me a lot to get ready for my fight. And I'm ready for all styles because I fought southpaws, right-handers, and, you know, guys who switch, like Daniel. So you know, it's been good for me, and I just can't wait to fight because I don't know what my opponent is going to bring because I fought the best guys in the gym already to get ready for the fight.
I stand corrected. They got some nice like junior middle to middleweights in there right now. I forgot about that. They've added some guys. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's been great. Rashad Holloway actually helped us too. There's so many guys, but the guy who gave me the black belt was a light heavyweight Russian guy. I don't even remember his name, but he was pretty good. He's a world champion at light heavyweight in the amateurs, and he's 12-0 right now. I actually work with Ismail, who just fought on Friday Night Fights.
Night Fights, yeah.
Yeah, I sparred with him too.
Oh, man, how did that go?
Man, that guy hit so hard, you know, he's light heavyweight, and Freddie always has me spar with big guys because I hit hard. And sometimes, you know, I hit the guys at my weight class and I hurt them. So he told me, you know, there's this guy here. You want to work with him? And I didn't even know who he was at first. I got in there and then, you know, I was like, man, this guy could pop. And then afterwards, and I found out who he was. And it's all love now. I don't spar with him no more. Hell no, man.
Well, I heard he was sent down over there by Sugar St. Mosey personally, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. I gotta stick to guys in my weight class. I mean, I hit pretty hard for us. He tells me I hit like a light heavyweight, you know, some cruiserweight, but oh man, that guy is just different. You know, I stick to my weight class; it's better.
Let's talk a little bit about the names that are at in your division right now. You know, Canelo just fought just last week on Saturday night in Anaheim. I mean, what are your thoughts about that? This guy getting a title and now being named the youngest 154-pounder and really being marketed fairly well. I mean, when you watch him, what do you think? What is your thought process?
I mean, I think that it's people who sell seats, and a lot of people love Saul. I mean, I think he's going to be a great fighter. I think he can develop into a better fighter than he is now. But I think right now there's so many fighters that could beat him. Any of the top guys in the WBC rankings will give him trouble in that weight class. I think he's just going to get protected until it's time for him to step up. And he gets hit a lot. He gets hit too much. And a fight with Angulo, a fight like me, I'll outbox him. And a guy like Angulo will crack him. A guy like Kirkland, you know, that's the kind of guys he has to face. You know, I give him props for winning the world title. But I think that, you know, De La Hoya is doing a great job in protecting him. And, you know, hey man, it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. And right now the guy makes money, so why not keep him that way, you know? And people love him. He's a nice kid. You know, I don't want to disrespect him, but, you know, in the ring when we fight, I'm going to destroy him. But outside the ring, he's a nice guy, and, you know, I wish him the best in his career. And hopefully one day we do get to fight. After I beat Saul Roman, I hope that, you know, he gives me the chance to fight him and, you know, take the belt home.
Now, how about Travis Trout? I know there was some exchange of words between the both of you guys. How close would that fight be to see you guys get in the ring?
I would fight Austin any time of the day.
I mean, Austin Trout, my bad.
Austin Trout, yeah. We fought three times in amateurs. I beat him all three times. I actually dropped him the first two times, almost had him out. I beat him to make the Olympic team. We were in the finals in the box-off. The winner got to go to the Olympic Games, and I beat him there too. Every fight that we fought, he got better. And, you know, as a pro, you know, he's accomplished a lot. And I would love to face him anytime. And he's a great guy. It's in the amateurs, we used to go have dinner together or lunch. And then we used to fight each other at night. And we were really close. And we're still close right now, too. He's a good guy. And I wish him the best. But he knows and I know when the bell rings, you know, there's no friendship. We want to kill each other. So Austin's a great guy. But in the ring, you know, I would love to fight him any time of the day.
You look at the rest of the division, and it seems like, you know, it's kind of wide open. You know, there's not really like the, you know, there's the money guy and Canelo, but there's not like the clear, and there's Austin who's there, he's got a belt, but there's not like that clear, this guy owns this division, I got to go see him to say I'm the best.
Yeah.
For you, out of all the guys, where do you think is the right place to start in terms of the names? I mean, Kirkland's going to be a little ways off as he builds, but who's the guy for you?
Anybody my promoter puts me in front of me. I mean, I trust on my team and to see what we do. Like, every time we fight, I come home, I sit down with my uncle and my dad. We sit and we talk as a team and see what's next for us, and then we talk to Top Rank. to see what they have for us. But as far as me, I think it's time already for me to just, you know, throw me out there and see what I could do, because Freddie always tells me, always rise to the occasion, and in the gym he sees that. The better guys he puts me in with, the better I look and the better I do. And, you know, I would love to fight Miguel Cotto, you know, God willing, I hope he destroys my organ, man. I don't like that guy. But, I want to fight Cotto. I would love to fight Zinzaruk. I sparred with him at Wildcard, and I did really well with him in sparring. You know, they stopped it in 3 rounds. I cut him. He was getting ready for a fight. We didn't want to, make him not fight. So I stopped the sparring session after, you know, I hit him. I mean, I would fight any of the guys, you know, even, you know, Kirkland or Angulo. Those are great fights for me, and in due time we'll fight them, you know, whenever they want. But I don't want to, you know, fight those fights where, you know, the promoter, you know, promotes the fighter until it's time to throw him in with the big fish. I want to be the guy to go in there and fight these big guys and see how I look. I would love Paul Williams, too. He's just coming off a defeat, and he wants to get back up. I'll give him a chance if he wants to fight anybody. And whoever people want me to fight, I'll fight them. You know, I'm not just talking the talk. I really want to fight these guys. And
right.
I'm really hungry, and it's really different mindset now that I have than I did before.
You know, how about, let me ask you this. Have you ever got in and sparred against a guy that's in your same camp, you know, with being trained by Freddie Roach by the name of Julio Cesar Chavez Jr.?
Actually, I never spar with them, and I know why they don't want me to spar with them, because I know I'm going to make them look funny. He spars with other guys, but as far as guys who Freddie trains, me and Danny, when he was getting ready for a fight, you know, we're training together, and he's a friend of mine, he's a really good guy, and we train together, but we're sparring, just pretty intense sparring together, where Roberto and me and Danny, we would switch off. But as far as Chavez Jr., man, Chavez doesn't even want to be in the same room with me when he sees me.
is there a personal dislike there? I mean, do you guys have a personal
dislike? No, I mean, Chavez is a nice kid. I mean, we go running together. The first day he came in town, we actually got lost in the mountains, and I'm trying to explain to him which direction to go. He doesn't know what the hell I'm saying. I'm like, Chavez, this way. And then we got lost, bro. It took us 2 hours to find our way back. And then Alex Ariza was like, where the heck were you guys? I'm like, man, we got lost. And I'm trying to explain to Chavez how to get back. And, you know, we're taking different routes here. But he's a nice kid. I mean, we see each other. We respect each other. But as far as fighting and our skills, I think we're on two different levels. I mean, I think a fight between Chavez and Saul will be a good fight for them, too, because, you know, they're both being protected, and just let them fight each other, I guess.
Right, right. You know, I mean, have you given them, like, some type of sign language, like put the fist in the air and go, you and me, you know, in the ring, come on?
I don't think I have done that, the sign language way to tell them fight, but I think our minds, when we see each other, when we look at each other, you know, I think they talk to each other like, come on, man, yeah, it's me.
That's great, man. You know, brother, well, it's always a pleasure to have you on. I really appreciate you coming through and speaking to us. And I wish you the best of luck with your upcoming fight. Definitely going to root for you, man. I hope you get one of these big fights, you know. Like you said, you want to find out where you stand. I think a lot of fight fans want to know where you stand.
Thank you. Thank you guys for taking the time, you know, to do the interview with me. And I, you know, to me, where I stand is, you know, I know where I stand. Freddie knows and my dad knows. Freddie tells me, you know what, Vonis, look at all these fighters in the gym. If I didn't believe in you and see something in you, I would never work with you. I know that you are something special, and people see that in the gym. And now it's time to take that and put it in the fights and people to see. It's going to be a big wow on the 19th and on the 23rd of April. My time has come. This is my year, and you guys will see. And hopefully we'll do more interviews in the future.
Absolutely. Vanza, the Nightmare Monterosian. Brother, thank you again for coming on Leaving the Ring.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Take care.
Seven, two.
I really like that kid, man. I got to tell you, Gabriel, you know, I know some folks are kind of down on him because of the Kasim Uma, but I got to tell you, he's honest. You know, last time we had him on, we talked to him about that, and he said, listen, you know what, I want to fight him again. And he's not really shy of really, you know, making his point of who he wants to fight, you know. You could tell he's a very hungry kid.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's just kind of in that spot of you know, he's just got to be ready. I mean, I know there was a fight a while back, and he wasn't quite in the shape he wanted to, so they had to postpone it. But they've got two fights set up for him, and I think it was kind of a wake-up call, you know, that he could have been on a big fight card, and he wasn't ready. And now it's like, okay, you know, I got to be ready at a moment's notice, and that that, you know, the Spartan lifestyle, you know, when you get with a big company, you start making good money and the hunger dies down. And I think he realized, like, either realized or the hunger grew again because he kind of sat on the shelf there for a minute. And you look across the ring, and he's been developing longer than Canelo has, and Canelo's got a belt.
Mm.
He's got a following, you know, and he could do very well down here. You know, there's a large Armenian following. They will love Vanas to death. He could be fighting in Southern Cal. He could be doing a lot of things. And I think that audience would follow him. You know, the Vegas fights where Top Rank does their shows a lot of the time. I think he could do well, but I think it's the readiness is everything. You know, he's got to be ready to go. And I think now that he's seeing all these things developing around him, I think he gets that. And it's go time for him.
In terms of you know, like Canelo getting the title and he's the way he's being marketed, he's a ticket seller. We go back into matchmaking and Vaughn's, you know, showing his eagerness of getting in the ring with some of the big names out there. It also shows you where Top Rank kind of stands in building them, you know, knowing when to make or break this fighters, their fighters, you know, seeing that, you know, Vaughn's having trouble in the past. And even like Freddie Rhodes saying, hey, you know, you get in the, when he put him in with the right level of a fighter, he performs where he needs to be, you know, and that could be the case. You know, we've seen that happen with other fighters. They end up fighting to the level of the competition, not the level that they should be fighting at all times, you know. And now you see you hear the more motivation, you know. The reserve kid is growing into wanting to be the fighter that he was destined to be. And I really like that. I enjoy that about him right now.
Yeah, no, I expect him. What I want to see is I've seen him in the gym, and he's good. I want to see it translate into a fight. You know, I think one of his issues is the same thing that Danny Jacobs is working on, is that there's a tendency to kind of go back to that amateur style, kind of bounce around combinations, but not really shooting through the target, not looking to really use that power. And it's not a completely well-rounded game yet. And what they don't do is take the center of the ring and draw that line in the sand and learn how to kind of slip around, move around so that you're always kind of taking the center of the ring and taking that power position as opposed to kind of moving back into the ropes, letting the other guy kind of overwhelm you with volume and aggression. I think both guys have needed to learn how to sit down, stop hopping around so much, quit moving way more than you need to, but to stay in the kitchen a little bit, wait till something comes at you, move out of the way, and react to it, or cut it off at the pass if it's a wide shot. And it's a whole different level of game that it takes time to develop, and I don't think either guy really had taken the time to develop it. And, you know, Vanas has bounced around. He went back to Houston to work with Ronnie Shields, then he came back here, and he's kind of stagnated a little bit in terms of the fights he's getting. It's now go time for him to kind of learn all the things he needs to learn, be ready for those fights when they come. And, you know, 2011 is a year I think we're going to see who he really is as these fights step up, at least by the end of 2011, because I expect him to win his next two fights. Beyond that, I think the fights are going to get a little tougher, you know. What I really hope above all this is we've just had Kenny Adams, who's got a Golden Boy fighter. We had Vaughn, who's a top-ranked fighter. Is that by the end of 2011 or sometime this year, somebody gets these two companies to start working together because the talent levels are rising, and we really need all these fighters to be able to fight each other. I'm sick and tired of Bob Arum and Oscar De La Hoya's companies not working together. That needs to change because we got some good fights that could happen. I think we lost Dave. I think I'm sitting here talking to myself. Thank you, AT&T. Well, why don't we go continue on and talk about the other fights that are happening this weekend, particularly the fights happening over on the other, not really on another network, but on the pay-per-view with Showtime. We've got Miguel Cotto versus Ricardo Mayorga, which is a fight that is, you know, it is what it is. It's not top-level guys. I mean, Cotto is a top-level guy. He's a little bit more shop-worn than he'd like to be. You know, some say battle-tested, some say shop-worn. I think time will tell a little bit where exactly he's at. I think this could be a tougher fight than people realize. I think he's Cotto. He's coming off an injury. He's a guy that he's got a little bit more rust on him coming into this fight than Ricardo Mayorga does. I think ultimately, though, that the fight is going to come down to class, in that you know, he's just a higher class of fighter. He's got straighter punches. He's got a better wing general. Okay, then Albanani's a good fighter. I'm rambling about Cotto Mayorga. Kind of moved right into that one. I'm just thinking of Cotto, you know, he's got a great ring general in Manny Stewart. He's kind of retooling his style to be more of a boxing guy. But across the ring, Albanani has been working again with Ricardo Mayorga, kind of, you know, head trainer, but kind of brought in the last second, or, you know, for this training camp alone. And he's a very experienced guy, too. But I think it just comes down to class. I think it's going to be an exciting while it lasts kind of fight. And then, you know, around 7 or 8, after Mayorga gasses, the body work of Cotto is going to take over. And I think it ends on a body shot, suddenly.
You know, really, really, really quick and stuff. I've been having some problems with my computer. It just froze up again, so that's why I was thrown off. So I'm on my cell phone here. So I apologize for anybody that's calling in that want to be patched in to talk some boxing. I have no control of the switchboard at this moment, or see who David Chin, our producer, who he's going to be patching in onto the show. So I apologize. I'm trying to get it up. We only have about maybe 20 more minutes left of the show. But I'll go down real quick, Gabe, on my breakdown of that fight with Miguel Cotto and Ricardo Mayorga. You know, go back again and we talk about this fight here. It's an intriguing fight. It's a fun fight. Is it a fight of the elites? No. You know, I think this is more of a fight for Miguel Cotto in terms of gifting us all the great fights he's given us in the past, and we're giving him a pass by allowing him to get in with Ricardo Mayorga, who hasn't been a factor for quite some time now. You know, ever since knocking out the late Vernon Forrest in his, which you would consider his best time in the 147 division. You know, the thing I like about this fight here is that Yuri Foreman was the guy that he made his comeback and his campaign at 154, where Yuri Foreman was a boxer and a guy that really came in with a knee problem, and that's not an excuse, you know, saying that was the reason why he lost that fight, but he was a boxer and a guy that really fought backwards, where Ricardo is a guy that can really give you problems, you know. He can, early on, he can give you angles, and he can throw punches in really weird spots and stuff, and he had a really awkward uppercut that was able to land with Oscar De La Hoya, able to land with Trinidad, and able to land with Sugar Shane Mosley. You know, the thing is, too, is that we mentioned him as a big puncher. I don't know if he's a huge puncher, though, at 154, because he really didn't show that devastating power. He just showed the aggression, because the way he slaps those punches, he doesn't really put them on the base of the fist, you know, and he doesn't really turn those punches. But Cotto could definitely find himself in danger, just because he is so receptive to getting punched with an uppercut. You know, he has that style where he has that peekaboo, and he kind of leaves his chin there dangling to be touched. That's my curiosity there, is if Ricardo Mayorga, who's a bigger guy, 5'11", decides to go after Miguel Cotto, who is a smaller guy, because the guys that he's lost to have been bigger guys, you know. Grant that Sugar Shane Mosley is not a very big guy, but he's a very strong, strong guy, you know, and he's an athlete with a lot of power. That's what Shane brought into this fight. Where Miguel Cotto, we still don't know how strong he is at 154. I like this fight in so many ways, because it could be a short night, or it can be one of those nights where Miguel has to do a little bit more to get a KO, or can get clipped by a guy that says, you know what, I'm going to come forward and I'm going to pose my size, and I'm going to try to land that uppercut, because that's what's been visible on other times, you know, when you've been hurt. You know, Antonio Margarito hurt him several times with the uppercut. He was hurt, you know, with Chop Chop Corley. He was hurt with Torres. You know, he was caught with Zap Judah with the uppercut. Shane Mosley, he does get caught with that shot, you know. And I want to see what Ricardo Mayorga has gamed up in a plan. And we've seen him when he got in with Shane Mosley. He did have a plan. He had a plan with Fernando Vargas. He does know how to stick to plans and stuff, but unfortunately, not all his plans have kind of roll the carpet for him so he can be the victor at the end of the night. I say Miguel Cotto is going to be successful. I just don't know if it's going to be successful early night. I think, you know, some folks say in 4 or 5 rounds. I say it's going to be late. If anything, it's going to be late. And I think you might be right with the body shot, but I think it's going to be – I'm looking at maybe the – I'm thinking of the traditional hook to the body and hook to the head, Gabe. You know, something that we've missed from him that he hasn't done a whole lot ever since he's been stepping up in class.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's somewhere between 8 and 10 is when it happens. You know, Miguel's not a one-punch guy. So, you know, it's going to be a war of attrition. He's going to have to slowly break him down, slowly get him going. And then ultimately, as Mariga gasses, he can't smoke cigarettes and box. Speaking from experience.
Right.
He just can't do it. You know, I mean, I used to be, I quit smoking, but I used to be a very, very heavy smoker. And, you know, like literally like a pack a day, you know, for years and years. And, you know, when I was training pretty heavily to box, and this was, you know, this was a while ago. I don't train nearly as heavily as I did then. I was going 6 days a week, hour and a half to 2 hours, you know, every session. And I was in pretty good boxing shape. Not, you know, I wasn't professional. I'm not trying to say that, but I was in pretty damn good shape.
Right.
But when it came time to spar, you could tell. You know, I was doing my running and everything, but I was still smoking a ton. And you can't do it. You can't do both. You just can't. It takes something out of your lungs. It lowers your lung capacity so that you're just not at full potential. And, you know, sure enough, a few rounds in, and just done. You're just done. And I think, you know, Mayorga, he drinks beers. He smokes cigarettes, and that's not a lie. It's just the way he rolls. You can't do that against a guy like Miguel Cotto, and I think he's going to gas halfway through the fight. And, you know, a lot of it's going to be Miguel doing good work. But, you know, I think that's going to be a major factor, and then he's going to get taken out.
The interesting thing is here is that both guys have been known to gas out in the later rounds. But the gassing out of Miguel Cotto has been because he's had a box. You know, and use his legs a little bit more. With Ricardo Mayorga, he can really stay in the pocket, you know, and be in tight in the chest because of Ricardo Mayorga's wide punches. I'm betting, though, that when Ricardo Mayorga, Gabe, who lands a body shot, that we're going to probably see some smoke come out of his mouth.
Yeah, seriously. I think, you know, he just doesn't take a ball to the body. I mean, look at what... With Trinidad, when he finally started going to the body, the fight was over. It was done. You could see it, you know. Yeah. I think, you know, maybe, you know, he's going to be spitting up the King of Beers and some marbles somewhere around 5 or 6, and then it's going to be this mop up duty down the stretch, and Cotto gets him out of there.
Exactly, man. And, yeah, I just can't see him taking this. But then again, this is boxing. You can't rule out a guy like Ricardo Mayorga, you know, but there's never a for sure thing in boxing, and that's what makes the sport so fun. That's why we tune in. That's why we watch the sport. That's why we love the sport, because of the fact that never a for sure thing. There's always something that can happen. That's why we tune in live, you know. We want to watch it while it goes. We want to see the chapters unfold. We want to see the storyline get deeper and more drama to it. That's why we tune in. I'm excited about both fights that are happening Saturday night. Really quick, Gable, because my system is down. I can't get it back up at this moment. I'm going to have to take my computer in to get cleaned up. I don't know what's going on with it. But let's go down with our fight schedule, and I think we're done for the night, man. I apologize for the people that have been calling in to get in. You know what's my bad? You can blame it on me and cuss me out. Send me anything you want on the Leaving the Ring Gmail account. Don't forget, too, Noche de Boxeo has been moved to another Blog Talk because we have something in the works, and we couldn't keep it on the same one. We will explain it later in the month. It's something I think a lot of people are going to be very appreciative that we're doing. We just can't reveal it, man, unfortunately, at this moment. You know, we need to kind of keep it in a hush-hush. But once we announce it, I think a lot of folks are going to be excited and happy that we did this for the fight fans and stuff and the listeners that tune in to Leaving the Ring every Thursday night. But Notes of the Book Sale still on Monday night, 5 o'clock, and you can still find them on notesofthebooksale.com. We are going to put their link on – their link is on Leaving the Ring at leavingtheRing.com as well. Okay?
Well, I think your computer has jinxed my computer because I'm trying to pull up the schedule. And, okay, here we go. It's just moving a lot slower than I'd like it to. All right. So, yeah, thanks, Dave. I'm blaming you for everything right now.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we are on Friday night. If you're into the pay-per-view thing, I don't think it costs too much. You've got at Planet Hollywood, Las Vegas, Nevada. You've got Michael Grant against Ty Fields, 44-6 versus 44-2.
And Joel, I've got some of yours on that card. Wow.
Yeah, Casamayor's on that card. He's not fighting Mike Conchando. I believe they pulled out of the fight. But you do get Michael Grant versus Ty Fields. Yeah, I'm not buying the pay-per-view, but I'm kind of interested to see it. I'm taking Michael Grant in that one by knockout. Probably a little later in the fight, but certainly by knockout. March 12th, Saturday, let's get to the real fights. At the Madison Square Garden in New York City, actually not Madison, at Foxwoods Casino, and Resort in Nantucket, or however the hell you say it, Connecticut, Sergio Martinez, 46-2-2, versus Sergey Zenzirik, 37-0, for the middleweight title of the world, the actual linear real middleweight championship. I'm taking Sergio Martinez by stoppage in 10. Dave, you've got Martinez as well.
Right.
Did you go decision?
No, I'm going to go by KO. I think by TKO, I think, you know, him, God, there's just so much stuff that he's doing in that gym, man, I wish we could even talk about. We'll talk about it, though, next week if he is successful. And we'll get Sergio Martinez back on. And also, folks wanted us to have him on tonight and stuff. We were just playing it really, really close because we had so many things going on. But I got him for late take TKO as well.
On the undercard, we've got the co-feature, rather, Andy Lee, 24-1. Versus Craig McEwen, 19-0. I'm going by Andy Lee, late stoppage as well, although I think it's very easily a fight that could go the distance. Dave, you're taking Lee as well.
I'm taking Lee as well, right.
We got also Kendall Holt is on the card. Demetrius Andrade is on the card. So it's some good fighters. And a fight that I'm really looking forward to, and I wish we could see it on a stream or something, Javier Fortuna, who's featherweight, prospect,
right.
from Develop Promotions. I did a story on him that was out a couple days ago on Max Boxing. He's 13-0 out of the Dominican Republic. He's coming off a spectacular one-punch knockout in his last fight. He's taking on Derek Wilson, who beat Ricky Lopez and Charles Huerta, two prospects at Golden Boy. And he's 8-1-2, but has only got, I believe, two knockouts. But looks can be deceiving. This is a really tough style. It's really kind of a nice bit of matchmaking here for Fortuna, and it's a tough fight. I'm taking Fortuna, though, by late stoppage. I think the kid's the goods. At the MGM Grand, yeah, I don't know, was he training there the night that you went over to see Martinez?
No, he was. I think he was going to be there like 2 weeks after I was there, but they were talking about him when I was down there.
Yeah, he's as good as they come, I think, as far as prospects. Some guys might not like some of the defensive stuff that he does and might be like, uh-oh, another Broner. But this is a guy that I think is easily going to be one of the top prospects in the world, that people will find out about very soon. At the MGM Grand in Las Vegas, Nevada, on pay-per-view Showtime, Miguel Cotto, 35-2, takes on Ricardo El Matador Mayorga, 29-7-1. This is for the WBA junior middleweight belt. I got Cotto by late stoppage, and so does Dave. Also on this pay-per-view, you've got Miguel Vasquez, 27-3, versus Lenny Zappa, or Zappa Vigna, 25-0.
Zappa, I wonder where he's been. You know what I mean?
Well, he knocked out that Ji-Hoon Kim like in one round last year. He's been kind of under the radar a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. I think he's been off TV, a little bit. I don't think he's actually been fighting a little bit, but this is an interesting fight, Zappa's kind of got he's got some power to him, but he's very raw as a fighter.
You know, he's athletic, though. You know, he's athletic, though, you know. But in terms of sitting down and having a game plan, he's you're right, he's really raw, very raw with that right now.
Yeah, and when it gets deep, it doesn't seem like he knows quite what to do. I'm going with Miguel Vasquez in this one. I think his punches are a little tighter, a little sharper. He's a little bit taller. In terms of his development, I mean, he went the distance with Ji-Hoon Kim. Zappa knocked him out in one. You know, Vasquez is the guy that upset Brady Prescott in the split decision. I mean, it's kind of apples and oranges in terms of their development. I think they both got some good guys on their name on their ledger, but I've been more impressed with Vasquez, and I'm not completely sold on Zappa. It'll be an interesting fight.
I'm not completely sold on him as well. But
yeah,
it is an interesting fight.
Yeah, it's definitely an action fight. You know, whoever's there is really gonna be treated to something good. And then on the flip side of that, you've got Yuri Foreman, 28-1, versus Paulo Wolak, 28-1. You know, that's just a tough one to call.
I really like Foreman in this one. You know, Wolak is a guy that you can't count out. You know, he's a good puncher, strong guy. But if Foreman comes in 100% healthy, I think it's him. I think it's all him. I think it really depends on how healthy Foreman is when he steps in the ring Saturday night.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree with you. I think if his legs are okay, then it'll be a win for him. This is such a funny card because you've got Joshua Quatty versus Calvin Green as well, 35-4 versus 21-5-1. It's like they kind of put you to sleep with the first two long fights and then slowly wake you up with Miguel Vasquez, and then it all comes to a crescendo with Cotto Mayorga. Also on that card is Matt Korobov, 13-0, versus Michael Walker, 19-6-2. And then at the Brayhead Arena in Glasgow, Scotland, Ricky Burns comes back, 30-2, versus Joseph Laria, 14-4 for the WBO junior lightweight belt. I'm taking Ricky Burns in this. I just think it's kind of a get back fight. I mean, you know, he's coming off a win, obviously, but he's been off for a little while, and I think that they're not gonna just feed him right to some guy that's gonna beat him as soon as he gets his title. So we'll see. You know, he's been off. Well, he hasn't been off that long. He's fought back in December, but I don't think this is anything to be too terribly worried about. And then
to get his hands and his feet wet, I think that's what that fight is and stuff, you know. And, you know, really, really quick, I wanted to add on with the Wolak fight because I know some folks are going to email us and go like, what? I think this, if Wolak jumps on Foreman right away, test that knee, then he's got something. If that's the game plan, that's a hell of a good game plan. Test the knee. Get out there and don't try to jab with them and box with them. Test the knee. Make it into a mall fight.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that's, it's something you're going to have to get in there and get rough with him, kind of move him around, push him around, see where he's at, see what you can do with him, and then make your move, you know, from there. And I think that's really the only way to deal with a boxer like Foreman, who will just move and move and move all night long and hope that he can just outbox you for the whole time. And you got to cut off the ring, you got to hit him on the hips, kind of just rough him up and get him out of his comfort zone. Otherwise, you're looking at a long night, you know, because Foreman will not stand there and trade with you. Let's be a good fight. You know, it'd be a tactical affair, but still, I think kind of like there'll be some high-level things going on with Foreman and kind of some interesting things in terms of how well he's going to come back from this injury that he had. Because, you know, who knows? He might end up being more flat-footed, which is actually good for us because it'll mean – it's going to be a more exciting fight. So there you have it. That's your weekend fight schedule. Did I lose Dave again? I'm telling you, AT&T, you're killing us. Well, I imagine Dave's not going to be coming back, so we only have about 15 minutes left in the show. So on behalf of Dave and the rest of the crew here at Leave It in the Ring, this is Gabriel Montoya signing off. And we'll see you next week at the fights. Take it easy, fight fans.
And I'm back. I'm sorry. You know, my Skype came up and everything, so I came back on. Looks like Gable either hung up or fell off and stuff, so I apologize. Got to get this computer taken in. And, you know, really quick, I believe he probably finished the fight schedule here for the fight fans who are still tuned in and listening to Leaving of the Ring. I got to make some really quick announcements here. I want to welcome Mario Ortega, who just signed on with Leaving the Ring to be a writer. This guy is an upcoming writer. If you haven't had a chance to read his stuff in the past when he was with either Fight Fan Nation or Undisputed Magazine, this kid is really talented. He's about as talented as our other writer, Saul, who, if you haven't had a chance to read Saul's stuff, he does our weekly Leaving the Ring prediction and picks, which is always on Leaving the Ring site. You can go check out. I need to atomize that. I know some folks are like, hey, can you put all the weekends on one category, which we're going to do either late tonight or tomorrow in the morning. We still got to format that there as well. But I'd like to welcome Mark Ortega. Also, Ed Magic, who's going to be doing the photography and filming interviews over there in SoCal for Leaving the Ring. Ed Magic is a great guy. I've known him for quite some time, and he's going to pick up on the interviews. We're still looking for more people that want to do interviews or go, you know, even cover fights for us. If you're looking or interested in doing something like that for either Leaving the Ring, we're looking for people also for Noche de Boxeo, you know, who can write Spanish, speak Spanish, and kind of just want to have some fun, you know. This is a passion of ours. You know, this is something that we decided to devote ourselves to here on Leaving the Ring. Myself, you know, I do it strictly out of passion. I love the sport so much. You know, it's a huge part of my lifestyle and my life. So that's why I decided to do Leaving the Ring, and among other things like Noche de Boxeo, have the websites. And I just love to chop it up boxing and discuss boxing with everybody that tunes in. But once again, everybody, thank you again for coming on and listening to Leaving the Ring. This is the end of our show. Tune in next week, and we'll have all the little technical problems that we had at the end of the night. Luckily, it wasn't during our interviews, right? But at the end of the night, and we should have everything resolved. Once again, thank you again for tuning in, for Leaving the Ring. Keep supporting us. If you want to send us any questions or you want to kind of just recap of what we talked about tonight on Leaving the Ring, you can at leavingtheRing@gmail.com. And be sure to go check out and support the website, leavingtheRing.com. I'm sorry, the mailbag would be at leavingtheRing@gmail.com. And you want to check out the Noche de Boxeo. They've had some hell of a great interviews on their radio show as well. They have it recapped on their website, NocheDeBoxeo.com. This is Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with Gable Montoya. You're listening to MyBoxingFans.com official radio show. You can catch the archive within the hour. You guys have a great night.